Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, I think, Tyler, that was a pretty balanced show, start to finish. Some good wrestling and a handful of just good in-ring promos and some nice vignettes. This just was kind of a complete package week-to-week episode of Dynamite. I liked it quite a bit. How about you?
Yeah, I agree with you. I feel like, you know, when we get post-pay-per-view, sometimes it's the Wednesday right after pay-per-view or even, you know, whatever, 10 actual days, the second Dynamite after a pay-per-view, kind of get like a reset and everyone gets kind of rebalanced. And this is not exactly the same, but this feels like, hey, we've been dropping hints at what our card's going to be the last couple weeks. And this is like, hey, if you didn't get all those hints, here's what we're doing. And not particularly newsworthy, but it's that like nudge for the audience. They're like, hey, this is where we're going in the next couple weeks and finalizing all of that. So, yeah, I mean, not entirely newsworthy. There's enough of that going around within the company and the industry. But, I thought this was a tight performance, start to finish, and helped the pay-per-view quite a lot.
I was curious if they were going to address Cody Rhodes' departure at all. And I figured they wouldn't. I wouldn't expect them to. But we did get a reference by Tony Schiavone to the only other dog collar match in AEW history between Cody and Dustin Rhodes. Thought it was appropriate. You know, if anyone's going to – I wouldn't say that was a shout-out to Cody in any way. I mean, it was historically accurate and would have probably been said if Cody had renewed last week. So I don't want to draw too much into it. But maybe it was a bit of a nod and a salute to Cody, just saying, you know, you're still part of our history.
Yeah, and I believe it was Excalibur during the main event, too. Talked about Sammy's match, I think, when he was walking out to the ring with Cody a couple weeks ago to unify those titles. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination. I read it as, you know, being gracious as a company on the way out, and then a conscious effort to not be like WWE and basically forgetting that people exist as soon as they leave the company. So I think that's a refreshing take and probably quite on purpose by Tony Khan and company.
Yeah, I don't think there's like an obvious place to start in terms of analyzing the show. I think it's sort of a pick 'em. So I'll just start with the opening segment. CM Punk sitting mid-ring, wearing a mid t-shirt. I don't know if he and MJF are splitting royalties on that or what. It's MJF's term, but Punk wearing it's going to maybe help sell it and taunt MJF with it. And he said, I'm drug free, I'm alcohol free, and I'm better than you. And I'm like, whoa, what's going on here? And then I'm like, oh, I see what you're doing. And he said, does that sound familiar, MJF? I spoke those words 20 years ago. They became the foundation of my career. I wonder how many people that was news to, Tyler. Like, what? CM Punk used to be like that? You know, they know he's straight edge, but did he used to say he's better than you because he doesn't drink and do drugs? But anyway, so he talked about that, and he called MJF out and eventually just challenged him to a dog collar match after talking about some other big matches he's been in. I liked the delivery. I liked Punk sitting center ring. I like history being that, you know, like territorial wrestling history being called upon when people who are students of the game, as Punk and MJF are feuding. So I like that. And the photo of MJF getting an autograph and standing next to Punk when MJF was a little kid was like a fantastic kind of conclusion to it. And I like the dog collar match being the stipulation, as Punk said, you know, he's not going to be able to get away from me like he might in a cage match, because Punk's acknowledging cage matches have sort of gone from, I got you trapped, there's nowhere to go, to it's just a prop that people climb in and out of, and sometimes and the door opens, and it just isn't really a way to keep a heel from running away. So my point is the stipulation sense, and Punk got to name the time and place because of winning last week's tag match, and so he picked the next pay-per-view on March 6th. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, all the points you just said I agree with, to even dive down deeper on Punk's decision for the dog collar match. Now, me personally as a fan, dog collar matches are not my absolute favorite, but as you had just said, I like that Punk is framed not as a, you know, bumbling idiot, as a babyface. I like that faces are allowed to be, you know, intelligent and kind of devious in their own way when they get to pick stipulations. So that was a nice touch there. And then I really enjoyed MJF coming out and just looking beside himself, dropping the mic and not saying anything. I thought that was a really nice touch that I did not see coming. And really, it felt, you know, we're not a week out before pay-per-view, but it felt almost like when the person that's going to lose the match on the pay-per-view wins a match, whether against the person they're competing against or one of their lackeys, the last episode before the pay-per-view. It felt a little bit like that. So I'm curious to see where this is going. And it's pretty, I don't know, maybe 60-40 on who I think is going to win that. And I think that helped to make it 60-40, not totally one-sided on who I think is going to come out on top there. So everything you said, agree with. And there's just a lot of nice touches throughout. And just, you know, CM Punk in general, I'm sure we'll talk about him. Someone will want to talk about him that calls in tonight. But it feels like, I don't know, Olympic, I don't know, 1500 meter runner, you know, on that second and third lap, they just kind of get into full stride. And it feels like this is the CM Punk that a majority of people wanted to see out the gate. And he's hitting a stride here with MJF, and it's exciting to see.
Looks like he's been hitting the arm curls and the bench press too, just the way he filled out the shirt there. You know, and I think, you know, that's not nothing. You know, looking like you're, you know, cause Punk joked in the press conference when he signed and was announced, he's like, yeah, I got to figure out how to look good in my underwear again. And I haven't really been doing anything but just, you know, exercises at home. And now he's had, you know, what, a half a year to August, September, October, November, December. Yeah. I mean, about a half a year now to just add some bulk and look a little bit more, physically imposing to those for whom that matters. And obviously there's some fans where it doesn't, but I mean, we did see a sign from a fan saying Adam Cole has a dad bod, late in the show. So, I mean, there are fans who are looking for the fighters to look physically, cosmetically formidable. And he looked, I don't know, it looked like he's, it kind of snuck up on me. It just was the posture and the t-shirt he's wearing, but it looked like, oh yeah, he's definitely put on some muscle.
And I think that's all kind of him. You know, I think he's bought in and excited to be there, but he feels truly bought in with this feud with MJF. And it's, if there was any hesitation or creative juices that weren't fully flowing, I feel like this brought it out in him. And hopefully it continues even post MJF. So it's yet to be seen.
I don't know where AEW would be if they didn't sign Punk, Danielson, and Cole, for that matter, Fish and O'Reilly and Malakai and Andrade. I mean, you go back a year and you imagine, oh, Kenny Omega's out with an injury and Cody Rhodes has jumped back to WWE after a contract impasse. And, it's probably a subject for another day than rather this show, which is focused on the post show. But, you know, who would be getting a push? You know, Miro's been out with an injury. Lance Archer is back. Who would other people have been elevated or what? Because, you know, you watch the show and you see Punk and you see MJF and you're just like, you know, MJF was part of AEW from the beginning, but there was no guarantee. I mean, I guess they'd just be, you know, Jericho would still be on top and Moxley wouldn't be feuding with Danielson and they'd still be okay. But yeah, I'm saying all this because it really has shifted to feeling like at one point it was the Bucks and Cody and Omega and Jericho and pretty early on Moxley, of course. And now it feels like it has shifted to this other group's company. You know, this other group of main event stars and Punk, like you said, feels like he's comfortable and at home now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, in a purely hypothetical world, which, you know, I guess we don't need to dive too much into, but you know, I certainly think Cody Rhodes would have been re-signed for basically whatever price he wanted in that situation, in that world that you're talking about. And then, you know, beyond that, I think MJF and Hangman Page would be the top story and they would have opened the show and MJF still would be leading everything in this world where they didn't sign everybody. But I certainly think they'd be getting, you know, 750,000, 800,000 viewers, not over a million. We'll see what this episode does. But I think they'd be in a worse place viewership wise if they did not sign everybody. So,
you know,
interesting thing about, go ahead.
I think that's probably true, but I'm maybe less sure than you for this reason. I don't know that Cody would have had the blowback by the fans and cut some of the promos that he cut if some of what was going on wasn't feeling threatened or diminished or hurt by Danielson and Punk coming in and signing, presumably for more money than Cody was making. And, you know, and Cody, well, Cody didn't say it for attribution, but it sounds like Cody sent word out, you know, that his big issue with Tony Khan and AEW is losing booking power. Mm-hmm. And that's like the least shallow reason among them, the reasons that are out there, or the less, the shallow sounds judgmental. I'm not trying to be that. The reason that fewer people would look down upon Cody for having, compared to, I want to be the top paid guy, you know, like, and there's nothing wrong with Cody wanting to be the top paid guy. He's a co-founder and he was a big star. Problem is, the case to make was much weaker now than it would have been 6 months or a year ago based on mm-hmm. crowd response and the promos he's been doing and all that. So my point is, if they hadn't gotten Punk, Danielson, and Cole, maybe Cody would have still been the fan's choice. Like, he'd been like, he's our guy. And maybe AEW would have a big star in Cody who would be as big or bigger than how Punk's coming across right now. And part two, maybe they would have accelerated the push of some of the other guys on the roster who are feeling a little like every time, you know, Buddy Murphy just got added. You know, Keith Lee last week, and they're just feeling like, God, that just knocks us down a peg or gives us someone else to compete with for TV time. Some of the younger guys might have gotten the benefit of TV time and a push where they would have gotten over and they would be drawing more than a million people. I don't know, but I'm less sure than you because I think AEW has such a deep talent pool to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to quantify everything with ratings when I, you know, evaluate things. There's lots to go into things. You know, I think, you know, WWE is a prime example of having the worst ratings in company history, and that's all relative to cable boxes not being around anymore. But, you know, they're making as much money as possible, so that they've ever made. So, you know, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison. But, yeah, I don't know. I think I generally align with you that the company, I don't know if it would be in a better place. It would certainly be in a different place. And I don't even know if there was less viewership, if maybe me personally, I might enjoy the company more than I do now. But yeah, I don't know. It's definitely a good what if to think about that, you know, AEW would be a different company, probably more similar to what it was at the beginning where, you know, you'd rely on someone like a Matt Hardy coming in and now someone like that is essentially useless on the show. So yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. I said what I thought, so I tend to lean that way, but, yeah. You know, I don't know. I think that it would be a different show and it would probably feel a little more like the little engine that could than a legitimate number two in that capacity. But in a year, 2-3 years from now, it might have borne more fruit than this version of the company will, in the same period of time. So it's yet to be seen.
You know, you and I could expand on that and fill a half hour, but we won't because it is a cool hypothetical. It's a cool alternate mm-hmm. universe scenario to look at the roster and go who would be getting more of a push quicker and how would that have gone? But nevertheless, we will pause there. In fact, let's just pause and introduce the show and we'll move on to callers and more conversation about half a dozen other key segments and happenings on this show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Wednesday, February 16th, 2022. I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter, which I started publishing in high school back in 1987, and it is still published weekly through this week and on and ongoing, and also the editor of the website, pwtorch.com, and the host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and several VIP audio shows like Post Pay-Per-View Roundtables, The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, and the Wade Keller Hotline series, which includes my start-to-finish recaps and analysis of the Monday, Wednesday, and Friday key live primetime TV shows, and the Focus on AEW and Focus on WWE series. We had back-to-back episodes of Focus on AEW this week, exclusively for VIP members, covering the Cody Rhodes situation in great depth, you know, deeply sourced, lots of different people, lots of different ages and perspectives on Cody, some on his side, some not so crazy about him, others pretty agnostic, putting a lot of pieces together about what was going on behind the scenes. I think in totality, largely, and some people disagree with this, I think, but largely sympathetic to Cody, but with some caveats that caused some uproar. But, you know, it's all out there and a lot of details on that. So go VIP if you want to get kind of a fascinating look behind the scenes at the dynamics with the EVPs and how things work with Tony Khan and how Cody got kind of caught up in a bunch of circumstances and then in some ways became his own worst enemy in various ways. So anyway, lots of content up on the site. On our Blue Logo show, by the way, which is free for everybody, it was a two-part flagship with Jason Powell. We talked a lot about Cody Rhodes. We got into some of the insider stuff, but we also looked ahead to him in WWE because we broke the story yesterday that Cody is heading to WWE. I think others hinted that that was presumed the case, but we had sourcing that it was. And then today other people reported it, didn't give us credit, but that happens, Cody's heading to WWE. And we talked about a lot of possibilities for Cody there as a heel, as a face, with and without Brandy. It looks like it'll be without. So check that out if you haven't yet. We also, Jason and I in part two, previewed Elimination Chamber. And then tomorrow on the Blue Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, as opposed to this, the Red Logo Show, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, we'll have Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure special episode, Free for All, with their in-depth preview of Elimination Chamber and the reaction to some news stories, too. So lots of stuff happening this week on these Wade Keller shows. Thank you for joining us. If you're streaming but not subscribing to both feeds, just search Wade Keller in your podcast app, and you'll see the post show with blue lettering and the podcast with blue lettering and the Wade Keller post show with red lettering. Otherwise, the logos look the same. Subscribe to both, and then you'll get all of our shows. And as noted, this is a post show, and we're focused on AEW Dynamite. And on these post shows, I always have a co-host. And today's co-host is Tyler Sage, a PWTorch.com contributor, a PWTorch VIP podcast host who covers AEW Rampage late on Friday nights, Tyler. It's going to be weird. You're going to be recording like during SmackDown this week.
Yeah, I'm excited. I might actually. Good.
I forgot to say welcome. So welcome.
Oh yeah, hello. I'm excited. Hopefully, I remember to watch it live on time, and I'll be joined by Kelly Wells this week. So
okay.
For anyone that wants to get a little NXT AEW crossover, we'll be doing that. But yeah, it's very exciting, and I would say a great reason to go VIP. If I can advocate for you, Wade, and your reporting is, instead of looking at snippets on Twitter that are credited to someone like Wade's name, if you go VIP, you can listen to the full reporting and make a decision for yourself. I think that would behoove everyone out there that maybe is listening to this and hasn't done that yet. And, of course, you can listen to my show every Friday night talking about Rampage and kind of bigger picture stuff within AEW. But this week especially, I think Wade's reporting and everyone at the Torch that's contributed to the Cody story has been really good. So that's my free plug for you, Wade. So thank you for having me.
You know, if you say something like, I like your mom or I like your grandma, how the tone and the context can completely change how that gets taken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll just say this. When I write things, I imagine how is someone going to read it? And I have to use the right words in the right place. And I assume they're going to read the full article, not just one sentence in the middle. And it's my responsibility to convey the tone and the context within my writing. But when I podcast, there's things that can be turned into a bold clickbait headline or an aside that doesn't sound judgmental, but is more an anecdote or an example of something that isn't meant to be plucked out and turned into a out of context selective story. But that happens. And that's not in every instance of what's happening this week and other times when people, you know, pull content and do semi-accurate but fatally, slightly inaccurate renditions of what I said. But that does happen sometimes. And Twitter's a tough place for that because then, you know, people who are friends with people, and that happens. You know, they go, oh, that person said that. Oh, the mean media, and that's so nasty, and I'm going to come to his or her defense. And they haven't heard the context of it. And the tone and the placement. And it doesn't mean their opinion will necessarily be different after they hear it in the end, but they'll certainly have a better, more informed reaction if they actually hear everything. And so sometimes that happens, and it's been going on forever. It's just a little more instantaneous now with social media than it was in the 90s, where it was, you know, more game of telephone and whatever, you know, media evolves, and we're in a different place now than we were even just, you know, 15, 20 years ago. So that happens.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, if people just, you know, can judge for themselves when, you know, I've got a multi-source story and putting a lot of thought and care into it. And then you see someone just kind of go, this will get a click. If I take this quote and I leave these words out, it'll seem even worse, whether it was malicious and intent or just sloppy or, you know, someone just doesn't know any better. I mean, it leads to an uproar. And then a lot of people look bad and then they dig in and it's just, we don't need that. You know, it just, we can all get along. Not everybody, some people are going to make mistakes. Some people are going to have differences of opinion. We know the EVPs in AW didn't always get along. And I know from talking to people, sometimes people have different opinions on the same person and the same circumstances. Some people see excuses for actions. Others don't see it as excusable. And I just try to get as many contacts as I can and pass them along to people. And I've been doing that for 30 plus years in my style of reporting. And I burn through sources sometimes because I don't play favorites. You know, or I certainly do my best not to. You know, I'm glad that the people who hear the context of our reporting and all the different opinions that the Torch brings in, it's not just one or two or three people also. You know, Jason holds me accountable when he's on this week. Like, you said that, but what about this? And I'm like, oh, that's a good point. And that's part of the dialogue of trying to make sense of complicated situations like is going on in AEW, you know, this year with Cody and Tony and whether it's a falling out or just a friendly business breakup, however you want to look at it, it's a complicated story with complicated people involved, and a lot of different people have different opinions on it. So go VIP, people, pwtorch.com/goVIP, and you can hear it all you can hear it all yourself and make your own call. Cool. So let's shift to phone calls. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll let us know you want to be on the show. We do have two different on-site correspondents planning to call in who attended tonight in Nashville. They both are staying around for Rampage, so it could be a little bit later in the show. It'll likely be later in the show when we hear from them. And if all goes well, we'll get a couple perspectives on what it was like in the building. Tyler, it felt like a pretty red-hot crowd, which even Jim Ross mentioned at least two times during the show.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, definitely, I always like to watch the Rampage crowd because that's, you know, hours 3.5 to 4 that crowd's been there. And if you're in the main event and you can get the crowd to stand out, that's usually a pretty good sign in my book. But, yeah, I mean, crowd seemed especially hot. I think the last couple weeks have been pretty good. Not that it's ever bad, but, yeah, I mean, this crowd was into it. There was especially one gentleman during the entire CM Punk promo that was very much having a good time. So I'm curious about him when I asked. So, yeah, I say that tongue-in-cheek, of course. But, yeah, I think the crowd was really good. And obviously, in the main event, they were hyped. And felt like an NXT crowd in a smaller thing. They were saying this is awesome to things that I didn't particularly think were that awesome. But it's good. You know, I'm glad everyone had a good time watching the show.
Yeah, there isn't a independent, nationally appointed committee to decide what is awesome and what isn't. So we just sort of have to go with the adrenaline rush of a live wrestling audience and grit our teeth a little bit sometimes over how generous they can be.
Yeah,
nothing was bad. Right? I'm sorry.
No. I think that's why we're here. I think on the post show here, we can determine what is awesome, what is not. That's my goal.
Well,
at least, so
good. We will be there. We'll be the arbiter.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
All right, very good. Oh, email too. You can email us wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. You can, by the way, you can send in emails throughout the week. Jason, Paul, and I on part two of the flagship answered a variety of email questions that are specific about current events and some broader topics inspired by current events. And we mark them in the inbox and get to them. You know, usually within a week or so, and sometimes the same day that you send them in on our Wade Keller podcast. So you're always invited to participate in that conversation and give your opinions and also spark us to talk about certain topics and answer your questions. Okay, so we will get to phone calls now, and we'll begin with Scott in Tampa, Florida. Scott, good to hear from you. What stood out on Dynamite tonight for you?
How you guys doing, first of all?
Good. Thanks for asking.
You knew? Oh, okay, good.
Yep.
First off, I just want to say good work on the coverage of Cody Rhodes past couple of days. I listened to your show with Jason. That's almost 3 hours, and then with Rich again, and the folks on AEW yesterday. That was really good. you know, tonight just felt like a breath of fresh air watching Dynamite. You know, I thought that Cody, you know, should have left. I think that they did the right thing, kind of just letting him go because it was getting a mess. But on to tonight's show. What do you guys think about the opening promo with CM Punk? I thought it was really laid out, really done well. Punk seemed to have like more passion and more focus to me than he had, you know, early on when he first got with the AEW. And then my second question, second part to that question is, how do you guys feel on AEW opening these shows lately? A lot more recently, opening them up with promos instead of a high-flying match as they were accustomed to doing. I personally like it myself to do that every now and then to face the show out, but I just find it curious on what your thoughts are on something that they haven't done a lot of, but lately I've been seeing it done more of. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, first of all, great minds think alike, Scott. You must have tuned in a few minutes late, but your first question was the only thing we covered so far on the show. So I'll just refer you back to that. It happens. But in short, we liked it, and your points were a more succinct, pithy version of our points. So we're in sync there. Your second question is a good one, and that's a little bit more general, but it does apply to the opening segment. Tyler, it is notable. They're not just going to the ring and ringing the bell. That's Rampage now, right? You know, I mean, has Rampage ever opened with talking?
Oh, geez, put me on the spot.
I am sorry.
I don't
not often.
Think,
if
I
at
don't
all.
Think. Yeah, I don't think so. Maybe once or twice, but yeah.
Yeah, and so maybe we kind of get that out of the system. Was that the opening segment, Punk, when he debuted on Rampage?
Yeah,
because it was
okay.
Live.
Yeah, I can remember. Yeah.
Oh, that's it was because I was getting ready to do the SmackDown post show with Nick Barbati, and we kind of live commented on it as Punk talked. So yeah, and that was kind of a special episode, but an exception to the rule to try to establish the brand in the show. Yeah, so on Dynamite, Tyler, we've seen this now. You know what is a WWE formula, although certainly WCW Nitro did its fair share of it. Impact Wrestling did it. It wasn't just WWE. That open their 2-hour, 3-hour shows in prime time with talking. I'm not sure what to make of it. If it's a philosophical change or if Tony is studying those minute by minutes and experimenting a little bit. He has really good talkers now. I mean, this was a show that flexed the muscles of their promos. I mean, we'll get into it, but you know, Adam Cole getting featured on the mic, I'd say more than at any other time, just getting to kind of stand there and stand opposite Hangman and play off of him. The Moxley and the Bryan Danielson and CM Punk. It was a strong show in that regard. What do you think of that approach, and what do you make of us seeing that more often lately?
Yeah, I mean, I like 30,000 foot view.
I meant Tyler, yeah. Go ahead.
From like a 30,000 foot view, I like that it's not the same every week. You know, they don't open with a promo every week. They don't open with a hot tag match every week. So, you know, holistically, I like that. And, yeah, I mean, kind of what you said at the very beginning of the show here, Wade, is it feels like a changing the guard from who is the most important person and characters in the company. And, you know, the first 2 years of the show, it was more reliant on the in-ring stuff. And, you know, people like Jungle Boy and Darby and people like that are featured a lot, Sammy Guevara, are not the world's greatest talkers. So you have big-time matches to put them over. And, you know, like you said, with the talent he's got there, it's good to change it up a little bit. And, you know, one other thing tonight with having the opening promo with MJF and Punk, it just solidifies that's the A story in the company. That's kind of Tony's way to signal that, and it probably gets the best ratings, opens the show well, and keeps the eyeballs on. So I think it's a lot of things. I think it's mainly ratings, and I also think it's him taking advantage and just want to change things up and keep things fresh. So I'm for it at the moment. And, yeah, I mean, something to keep an eye on, but I think just changing up your formatting from time to time is beneficial for your audience that views every week, and just something to keep an eye on. You don't want to lose viewers, but yeah, I like it. I think it shows that he's adapting and using his roster to their fullest in his mind, at least.
Yeah, I like shaking it up. I don't want them to do it every single week, but I don't mind if they do it slightly more than half the time. I mean, I'm you know, I. The wrestling I grew up on, the AWA, was a territory known for its talking, and I love wrestling for a variety of reasons my whole life, but or since like age 7 or 8. and the personalities and the promos. And by the way, like, one of the things I liked about Punk's promo tonight is there was no meta. There was no break in the fourth wall. There was no outside the narrative structure of the show. You know, it's just there's wrestling history. I want to beat this guy up. Here's why. Here's what I want to get out of beating him up. Here's my strategy. I earned and here's how I earned the right to come up with a strategy in terms of time, place, and what type of match. It was just straightforward. And, you know, letting the – believing in the wrestlers as personalities, talking in a kayfabe storyline realm, it's so much better than the nonsense that Cody and Brandy were doing, and they're, you know, jumping all over the place. And you know, it's just Cody's passion a few weeks ago, if you muted the microphone or didn't know English, you'd be like, that's a great promo. But when you listen to what he says, it's just confusing and all over the place. And, you know, I've advocated for Cody to just simplify, strip it down, stay within the four walls of this narrative structure. And Punk and MJF did it, and it was just thoroughly enjoyable and coherent, and I think more effective. And I've been an advocate for that for a long time in the, you know, the 2000s, the aughts, that became a thing to do because wrestling promoters were both threatened and enamored with the internet knowing so much on a wide scale, so they thought we have to cater to those fans, and it got out of hand, and a lot of people just want to see a buzz on social media, and so they'll say things to get that buzz. But this was a disciplined, effective money promo. That's a type of thing you do when you're trying to sell tickets instead of get a buzz on social media. And I want to underline that type of promo deserves praise because it takes some discipline. A lot of wrestlers like to look at the internet and see people go, oh my God, I can't believe he said that. And MJF's been guilty of that with some of the stuff he's done. Not necessarily insider stuff, although a little bit with the contract talk, but sometimes it just, you know, get really personal with people. I just, you know, if it builds your character, fine. But if it doesn't, and it doesn't play to the feud, and it's just playing to the, quote, internet fan, don't do it. So that's another thing I liked, Scott, about that opening promo. Your reaction, Scott, to anything Tyler or I said, or you can change topics if you want.
No, definitely, yeah. Just to piggyback off that with the Cody thing. And that's the reason why. I love Cody, you know, just in the beginning, like almost everyone else did. You know, he was – thought he came off as a star big time, and he could have, you know, been something greater than what he ended up being. But going to that meta crap and talking about turning heel and you guys should cheer me and all this nonsense, and then Brandy a couple of weeks ago, I had enough of it. You know, they're just dragging everyone down. I just feel like watching Dynamite with his segments. I started to feel how it felt watching WWE a few years ago when everyone was booing Roman Reigns. It was just like every program he was in, he was just bringing everyone down and just not fun to watch. So, you know, seeing these guys just keeping it straightforward, Adam Page and Cole, you know, that was like a nice in-ring promo. And even Luchasaurus and Jungle Boy and Christian, you know, that short promo. Everyone just, you know, it was all wrestling related, and I just got built in for 2 hours. It was just a great show. And I think more of that going forward will elevate AEW and hopefully grab more eyeballs to watch Dynamite. My second point I wanted to bring up was Wardlow. I mean, I'm really becoming a big fan of his. You know, I thought tonight he had a great, you know, reaction, and that crowd, like you said, was red hot. And he's just coming off real well to me, and I don't know how soon or quickly we can go before he turns on the MJF and, you know, becomes this top baby face. But like, what do you guys think of his progress so far and this week in particular?
Tyler, what do you think of Wardlow tonight? I was curious about, you know, how Max Caster would or wouldn't be protected. He's currently a tag wrestler. It makes sense for him to lose. But you don't want to just, you know, make him seem like he's not in Wardlow's league, because I think they have their eye on Caster as a rising star, perhaps in the singles division at some point in the next, you know, 6 months to 6 years, to just use a broad window. How do you think not only Wardlow looked, but Caster too?
Yeah, so, you know, Wardlow in general, he's evolved his in-ring matches. You know, we had, what, 4 or 5 weeks in a row where he just absolutely destroyed a local talent, if you will, with you know, multiple power bombs, and then he's evolved to take on, you know, people that live on AEW Dark mainly, and then this is probably his first proper 7, 8, 9, 10-minute match, and, you know, I thought retained strong, but his him working as a traditional big man has evolved, and his in-ring style has improved for me, so I like that. And, you know, I think Caster, if you watch the entire picture in picture. And you saw that he dominated throughout a majority of the break. Yeah, I actually couldn't think what you call it, so I went blank there. So you put me on the spot there.
But you said it a little, but with a little tone.
There you go. Yeah. Well, yeah, because I had to. I couldn't just say have nothing. Anyway, as I digress. Yeah, the split screen. He you know, dominated during that and kind of did a little you know, matador to a rushing bull on Wardlow and looked mildly protected there and worked some stuff in. So I thought it was okay. I thought Bowens actually looked worse than Caster because he wasn't in a full match and got worked at the very end. So, you know, I think if you want to rank them, he took more, you know, negative connotation. I mean, I don't think either of them really did. They're slotted where they are, and Wardlow is getting a big push right now. So moral of the story is, I think him evolving, Wardlow that is, and having longer matches and actually selling and working psychologically as a big guy when he's not just absolutely dominating, I think it's been a good improvement for him. And I'm not too worried that Caster lost this. I mean, that's where he's positioned as a tag wrestler. So I don't think he's hurt in the long run by this either.
All right. Very good. Scott, any quick closing words for you?
Yeah, just a quick closing words. Like I said, Dynamite's been red hot for me the last few weeks. It's been a really good show. Lastly, you guys just talked about Thunder Rosa and the whole Break Breaker situation. I don't know who it was, Wade, on one of your networks or one of your shows, and mentioned that why would Britt Baker try – why does she prevent Thunder Rosa from winning the TBS title when now Thunder Rosa has a more incentive to go after her women's belt? Just doesn't make sense, but – you guys can just discuss that, but thank you for taking my call, and you guys have a great night.
Great. Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Tyler, you want to say anything about that match quick before we move on to other calls for that situation?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they just shoehorned Britt Baker into that situation to get to this match tonight, so it is what it is. I just don't think it was – that was not a well-laid-out plan, and they just kind of made it work to get this match tonight and get the story here at the end and to have Mercedes and Thunder Rosa probably – be friendly going forward. So yeah, so it'll work in the long run, but it felt kind of goofy while it was going on.
Yep. All right, we'll go to Steve in Baltimore next. Steve, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
So, well, the only one confused by the announcers saying that Jericho was unhinged and going after what world where somebody jumps up on the apron and they're not expected to attack, you know. Seemed like when Eddie Kingston jumped up there, Jericho was perfectly justified knocking him down. And then the announcers made a big deal afterwards that it was Jericho unhinged. Was that the only one that seemed strange too?
Yeah, that did jump out to me. You know, to say Eddie didn't put his hands on Jericho, I know announcers have decried wrestlers jumping on the ring apron. It's not their business. What are they doing up there? And in this case, they were focused on Jericho overreacting instead of blaming Eddie for being an instigator and being on the ring apron in a match that he wasn't part of. Is there more to it that helps make it make sense? Or was that sort of a, you know, it's the story they decided to tell because it's where they want the story to go.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because whenever he came out here, you know, Santana and Ortiz are in the face position of the tag team match and then Jericho and Hager are in the heel position. And then the way the announced team set up Jericho, I just think it's, for the pay-per-view match or whenever that match is going to happen, they're just framing Jericho as the heel, at least for that match, and then Kingston as the face just to get through. That's the way I read it. It just feels kind of all not ideal for trying to do a true face-heel storyline, which I don't think they need to do. It could just be two guys that want to fight, like Kingston and Punk had at the last pay-per-view, I think is the better way to go about this. And, you know, they didn't lean in too heavy, in my opinion, but if they go too heavy, it might – less than Jericho was a babyface for the intermediate. So interesting tactic to take, I guess, is how I read it, but not, it wasn't totally successful.
Well, what do you think of the direction they're going with Jericho in a kind of a more macro sense? Is this like good and, you know, is he going to end up heel and then that gives him a lot more options, including, gosh, maybe going after Sammy Guevara one-on-one for the TNT title or going after Hangman Page? Like, what's the trajectory here if Inner Circle stay broken up and Jericho ends up heel, as certainly the announcers are trying to frame him?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of, I don't know, at a crossroads, no pun intended, with Jericho here. And I don't know. It's like he feels you know, he gets the big reaction when he comes out. And I think even Eric Bischoff tweeted about that tonight that he thought he had the biggest reaction tonight. And I don't know. It just feels like he's done a lot that there is to do for him and his character, and his work rate is obviously, you know, not what it was even when he started in the company as champion. And he's losing his group, which has kind of been his whole identity. So if that is to go heel a little bit and take on people he's gone against, I just don't. You know, Jericho's the king of reinventing himself, and I think he's kind of in need of that here. Maybe post Eddie Kingston, take a couple weeks off, go tour with Fozzy, and then come back and do something fresh and new, because I'm not totally interested in what he's doing at the moment, and that's the first time I felt that way in a long time with him, even though the in-ring stuff hasn't been very good. So that non-answer is my answer for you, Wade.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure.
I you know, he took some heat a month ago for some photos, that screen captures that people took of the shape that he looked in. You know, his face was bloated. He just didn't look fit. I feel like the last few weeks he's like really gotten himself into better shape, and you know, looked better on promos, just in the face, but even physically he looks better. So I don't know if he, you know, and it goes a little bit against everything you said. Well, I don't know if it goes against it, but it looks like he's motivated for whatever reason. And if he ends up in better shape and stays in better shape, and I'm not just seeing things, that actually can help. You know, in terms of him having another chapter. You know, he's, I think, 51 years old now, and he might just be thinking, I don't want to not be able to keep up, and I want to have another good year. So maybe on the bright side, you know, whatever's going on is motivating him.
Yeah, and you know, he's also got his hair done too. Don't forget that, because he definitely got his hair lightened, or darkened,
yeah.
I should say. So that's important, and it looks very straight and beautiful, so that's good for Jericho. But yeah, that's kind of what I meant too. Like, you know, if this thing with Kingston happens, you put Kingston over potentially, and then yeah, he is maybe off TV for a week or two, and then has a new heel character, because he kind of likes to go heel face in his reinventions. So I'd be for that, and I think him being kind of alone, definitely not having Hager around, I don't think he helps the act at all at this point. But yeah, Jericho's done it so many times, I'm not going to count him out that he can't do it. And if he's motivated, I fully think that he can do something and make a new character that could be interesting and new compelling stuff at the mid-card. So the show is better when Jericho is doing really interesting, fun stuff. So I hope it happens.
All right, Steve, anything else for us?
Yeah, I thought the main event, thought they had a good match. But there were several times when Sammy was selling his knee, but all of a sudden it would go back to 100% health, and he would do something that clearly you couldn't do with an injured knee. He jumped to the top rope like a cat, and like he forgot he was supposed to be selling it, or just didn't care. And you know, did you guys pick up on that?
I picked up on the long-term selling. It didn't jump out to me while typing up the report that there were moments that he just sort of magically had the knee repaired. If you're not really hurt, I can imagine it being difficult to consistently seem hurt. You know, when he went for the GTH, he kind of hopped and limped, and I thought that was nice. Tyler, did you notice the inconsistencies that Steve did?
Yeah, kind of like you, Wade. The long-term, you know, the match long selling of it was better than it has been. But, yeah, I mean, match, you know, move to move, I see it too. And I just think it's, you know, like we saw with Darby tonight, he's got a mat-based game that he doesn't always have to do crazy dives and coffin drops and stuff. But I think Sammy just needs, like, another level, like another gear to go into to perform in his mind when he's selling something, to not have to do, you know, a Spanish fly off the top rope and then a cutter when someone's diving at him. You know, if he had some sort of secondary offense when he's injured to do that, I think that would behoove him to learn as a wrestler. But, yeah, I mean, for me personally, it's not as bad as it is for other people. But, I mean, I know a lot of people really don't like that he doesn't sell as much as he could. So I totally see that as well.
All right, cool. Appreciate the call, Steve. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Yep. Sounds good. All right, we'll go to Hinton in London, Ontario. Thanks for calling, Hinton. What is on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, Wade. Hi, Tyler. Could I open with a little bit of Cody, and then I promise I'll shut up about him?
Sure.
So, Wade, yeah. I must say, I've seen dozens of clickbait headlines on Facebook, but today especially, especially from what you said in your podcast. And, I mean, I knew from a distance that sometimes people write things for clickbait and out of context. But, I mean, I read these after listening to your podcast, and I'm like, Jesus, this is really sloppy. Like, they'll cherry-pick quotes, and then if they're not as sloppy, they'll bury the context in like paragraph 28 of the story. I'm like, this is like, this is dangerous, dude. You know, this is what drives people's blood pressures high. But there's one thing about Cody that you said in your podcast, which I really connected to personally. So I've known some people in my life, one person in particular, who's really formal, as you put it, right? And it's a bit subtle sometimes because they aren't really formal in the stereotypical way, but more like how they network at a conference, right? When they're actually trying to be professionally competent while at the same time friendly enough to, you know, get people to like them and such. And really sort of pre-planning their small talk. And I do it as well, not really for professional reasons, but more of I have a neurodevelopmental disorder, which hurts my interpersonal communication, but I think I'm getting better. But, you know, I do know someone who I work with, and I personally like this person, and I know people who don't like him because virtually everything he says, everything he posts on social media, every question he asks seems to have this external sort of extrinsic motivation, to the point where even something intrinsic that he does can be interpreted as having like some ulterior motive. I mean, I love this guy. He's done some great things for me. Some things he didn't need to do. But I often like think twice before having any sort of small talk with him. So I think I understand that part of the Cody criticism, if I'm understanding it correctly, from people who otherwise like him.
Yeah. I think that is an accurate and fair interpretation of how many people react to Cody. And, you know, I don't want to do 20 minutes nuanced explaining it and giving all the perspectives, but that is definitely a take that I've heard from multiple people. And, you know, I stress there are people who are critical of Cody, but like him and don't feel hostility towards him, but are still honest about what they think didn't serve him well on a large scale at times behind the scenes with the broad roster in the role that he had and the responsibilities that people perceive came with it.
Yeah. So moving on to tonight's show then, I want to start with JR. I like to give credit to JR when he deserves it. And I thought 2 weeks in a row now, JR has been actually really good. It seems like if you put him in a mood at the beginning of the show, like tonight we had an opening segment that stuck within the parameters of pro wrestling without being meta, and then a Danielson match that was, I thought, very psychologically sound, and then a Moxley promo, which was just, you know, had really good psychology in there as well. And you sort of get JR off on the right foot, and then he's just, you know, obviously he's not as energetic as he once was, but I thought he really added to the show. Like 85% of the things he said really got me more into every segment. Would you guys concur?
I thought it was a good night for Jim Ross too. I noticed Excalibur more, and I might have even noticed Tony Schiavone more than Ross for good chunks of the show when Tony was actually on color. But when Ross did jump out to me, I thought that he was contributing well, and there was a chemistry in terms of backing up what another announcer said or augmenting it, and not just changing the topic, which sometimes can happen in a 3 or 4, or sometimes an AEW five-man booth. So I thought it was a good night for him, and I'm not surprised you're bringing that up as an opportunity to praise him. How about you, Tyler?
Yeah, I agree. I think JR has actually been pretty solidly good. I don't know, for a long period of time, you're not, you know, in the beginning he had his issues, and, you know, beginning of AEW, but, you know, I think in general he's good, and obviously he liked the show start to finish, I would assume, and that always helps.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like you said, too, Wade, I think Excalibur felt like the true lead announcer tonight for majority of it. And I think that's a good role for all of them. And he's, you know, the straight man, if you will, right, in the comedy sketch, that's kind of leading the ship. And then Tony and JR kind of get their stuff in. But yeah, JR was very positive. And when JR is putting people over, it really helps to make that, you know, when you haven't heard him put over younger talent before, people you haven't had him listen to, it does help. And I think the announcing together was cohesive and has been hitting a good stride lately. So yeah, very positive.
And when he's just kind of in a good mood, you know, you know, you can tell, you know, I mean, that's just Ross had a reputation going way back for being moody and not hiding it. I think you know, different people are in different moods depending on a lot of circumstances in their lives, and they still have to go to work, and some hide it better than others. And sometimes when you're in a position of power, you feel you don't have to hide it. And when you're, you know, in a subservient position, you really feel like you have to hide it or it'll ruffle feathers. And so everybody has, you know, different challenges as far as that goes. But when you're on the air for 2 hours and you're in a bad mood and then the product's not good, it leaks out in some people like Ross more than it does in others. You know, I don't think Excalibur, you'd have any idea. You know, I mean, I made fun of Tom Phillips for being a robot the way that he talked. Excalibur's not a robot, but, like, he really is just steady. You know, like, there's no – I mean, I think there was one snarky thing he said to Tony Schiavone, like, a month ago, where I was like, wow, that was kind of weird. and it jumped – it wasn't even a big deal, but it was like, he doesn't usually show that human side of him. It's just very much, you know, here's the moves, here's the inflection, here's the points to hit, and very professional. And I'm not saying one is better than the other, but that's an example of a contrast. I don't think you'd ever know when Excalibur's in a good or bad mood.
Yes, I agree. 100%.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, Tyler.
No, you're good. I still want to be dead air. Go ahead. Hitting the CEO.
wait till Javier joins us. Go ahead.
Yeah, I always thought of Excalibur as being more of an AEW bot for whatever that is, just constantly excited by everything. But I want to move on to – so you've talked about Jericho. I want to focus on Santana and Ortiz a little. I think last week sort of set a good foundation for developing unique characters for the two and helping me in particular be able to distinguish between them, because – I'm so used to watching WWE where every, especially a person of color tag team would, they'll look alike, you know, like the Usos, for example, and the company really wouldn't give each individual sort of a chance to differentiate themselves and explain what is it that they add to, you know, the tag team. They sort of have the people of color be like this monolith. You look at the Lucha House Party, for example, at some point, like I was familiar with Grand Metalik from the Cruiserweight Classic. And then, you know, a few years later, it's like, who's Kalisto, who's Metalik? I just couldn't, because WWE just, Vince McMahon just sees them as all the same. Right. And when I heard Jericho last week comparing Santana to Eddie Guerrero, I'm like, come on, dude. Like, I understand that's a cheap pop, but Santana's got to be Santana, right? Ortiz has got to be Ortiz. Like, these guys need to be more, and not just, oh, they're Hispanic, so they're probably like Eddie Guerrero, right? And they're probably, as Jericho puts it, a hothead. I want to see AEW continue to differentiate between, especially their tag teams of color right now. Do you think they're heading down a good path in that direction?
Wait, what do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I think to go micro tonight, I want to, you know, praise JR again here. I think he did a good job explaining, you know, Santana is the, you know, the bigger guy. He's put on a lot of good muscle, and he's the guy that's going to, you know, do the big power moves. And then Ortiz comes in, he's like, he's the faster one. And, you know, JR did a good job, if you had never seen this team, because they're not on TV a ton, to kind of explain them to maybe a new viewer and get you behind them. So I thought he did a great job there tonight. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's a case by case basis with every tag team in all of wrestling. But I think with Santana Ortiz, they've gotten kind of a good refresh here. You know, I don't think I don't know, a team like Private Party feels kind of like that monolith that you're describing there, Hinton. But you know, it's again, it's case by case basis. I don't think there's malice there, at least within AEW. At least that's my take on it of that. But I think when a team is getting pushed, I think they are doing a good job to separate them, make them feel different. I think they did that with the Lucha Bros, you know, explaining both of them. I feel convinced, you know, that most people understood the difference between Penta and Rey, that they're different styles. Same thing, you know, Penta's with the hard hitter and Phoenix is the high flyer. So, yeah, I think they do a fairly good job there in general, but you know, like anything, everyone can do better, you know, ourselves included. So but yeah, I think if they're getting pushed, I think they try and do a good job to differentiate them and treat them as a unit and as individuals.
I'd like to see, you know, Santana and Ortiz be differentiated by now better than they have been, but I just think the way their team has been portrayed all along hasn't been you know, at their at the peak of what they can accomplish. And, you know, Private Party, I mean, if they've differentiated them, if I've forgotten or it didn't stick with me. But that's kind of a thing with tag teams. Like, Dax and Cash are, I think, intentionally relatively interchangeable, but there's some, you know, subtle differences if you've watched them, because they just get more mic time and they're more alphas in the division, where Santana and Ortiz have been more in the background of a faction, and like Private Party, for example, have been just more preliminary, and then also playing off of Matt Hardy as a dominant personality, just to grab three tag teams as an example. So I think it's circumstantial, mm-hmm. but the more if a team's around for a long time, I mean, it's like, you know, we kind of know the difference between the Usos now, even if WWE has stopped accentuating it and building storylines around it. And I think that makes tag team wrestling better when there's distinct personalities. Even Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson, we knew the difference between them. So anyway, I could go on and name a lot of tag teams, but there's examples of it. Hinton, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, I also wanted to touch on the Young Bucks. They mentioned when they're having that promo with Adam Cole, they said anybody but Hangman. And that's the first time they've sort of alluded to their, you know, we're still douchebag heels, but our feelings for Hangman softened after, on television, the only thing that made that their sentiments go soft was Hangman confronting them on Rampage and saying, listen, we're even now, but I'll make your lives a living hell if you interfere in my match with Omega. Something tells me that shouldn't be it. Something tells me that there's a lot more that happened on Being the Elite that has made them soften, you know, to Hangman, but still remain, you know, douchebag heels themselves. So what do you make of this general psychology of the Young Bucks right now?
Tyler, I'll throw to you on that.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm not caught up on Being the Elite, so if I miss anything, just have that be a note here. But just from watching Dynamites and Rampages and top-line AEW content, I think the story they're telling, especially, you know, when you go to Page beating Omega and basically they got the approval of the Bucks. He got the approval of the Bucks right before he finished the match. It tells me that no matter what happened, there is like a friendship there that can never go away, even if they're feuding for a period of time. And, you know, we'll see what happens when Omega comes back. But my feel here is that, you know, the Bucks, Cole came in and they thought they were all buddies. And then he invited his, you know, it's like a party or a get together. And, you know, the Bucks invited their friend Cole, but then he invited their friends without asking them. And like, they're the cool bad boys who brought a six pack of beer and, you know, the Bucks are good Christian boys. And now they're uneasy, you know, something like that. And they're kind of looking over at their friend. You know, they could have hung out with Adam Page, but they decided to hang out with their friend Adam Cole. And now they regret it and they feel like bad friends and they don't know how to, you know, all that stuff. I don't need to go any further, but that's kind of the vibe I'm getting. It's kind of like a high school movie of friendship between these guys and having the Bucks and Page and I assume Omega kind of align and kind of get a little refresh as a face when Omega comes back. It's kind of the vibe I'm getting, but, you know, I've been very wrong on things like this before. So, Wade, what's your thought?
Well, did you like the Adam Cole standing and not sure which way to go when the Bucks left stage left and Red Dragon went stage right, and then Brandon's like, which way are you going to go, and kind of rubbed it in, and Cole's like, shut up. You know, they're playing up that Cole is kind of trying to play both sides, but there comes a point where he might have to choose sides, but it also had a little bit of the, you know, kind of tongue-in-cheek tone to it that sometimes infiltrates Being the Elite, or is the entire core of Being the Elite, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, I think that story was told with the Bucks not coming out to help, you know, Red Dragon and Cole beat up Paige. So I think that story's already told. You didn't need that little flourish there. It's probably a step too far, kind of like you were talking about with Cody promos, you know, just a little too insidery. And I don't even like the two entrance tunnels, to be honest with you. So that's kind of to frame my opinion on that stuff, you know, having a heel. I understand the locker room stuff, but, yeah, I think it was just a little much, and I think the actions in the ring, in the arena, told the story that needed to be told, and it didn't need to be told in that little video, in my opinion.
How was it insider in the way of Cody's promos? If they're, because to me, I think this survives in the storyline realm of, you know, Cole's the super click with the Bucks, but then his NXT buddies show up. There's, you know, this tangled web of ROH and Indy and Japan and Bullet Club that kind of, you know, binds people together in different ways in this kind of weird flow chart. But to me, it's like Cole being trapped between – I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, hey, maybe it was enough that the Bucks weren't out there. I don't mind them emphasizing it in a different setting afterwards. I'm more for that than you. But I don't see where that's insider for Cole to be trying to play both sides, but then sort of just being caught in having to choose. Then it's obvious he doesn't like when that happens right now, because he still wants everyone to get along, or he wants to play both sides.
Yeah, and I didn't frame that very well, but, you know, I think it's degrees of intensity, right? I think Cody is, like, the maximum degree of insidery talk, and this is an example of, like, BTE jokey stuff that is not terrible. It's probably one or two on the scale when Cody's, like, a five or a six out of six. so that was kind of a broad stroke that I laid out there, but I think it is. It's not a problem. I didn't have a problem with it tonight. I just thought it was kind of like this night's episode, like talked at the top of the show, right? Like, a lot of these confrontations that were kind of set up, crystallized tonight for the pay-per-view, were crystallized tonight, and they were set up weeks ago. And that's how I felt with this promo in the micro, is that the story was told in the ring, and then it was like, hey, in case you missed it, here's what we meant, you know, which is fine. It's important to get that to the audience. That just, you know, I just didn't love it as much as... That's good.
If it turns out to be the Bucks and Red Dragon in those two spots in the triple threat tag match, is that just too contrived that one's going to win whatever the casino, a battle royal and a casino royale? I don't even, like, two different competitions. And if those two teams end up in that spot, it just sort of feels like there was no suspense. But it also seems really logical that's how it should end up. But I almost would rather have them be appointed in those spots awkwardly then compete and earn those spots through what are the odds of that happening, but of course it's going to happen situation.
Yeah, I mean, 100% contrived. You know, as soon as the triple threat match was announced, you know, the segment prior, two segments prior, it was just definitely odd, and then that segment happens, and it's like, oh, okay, that's what's happening. So, yeah, I probably prefer the latter, you know, just have them appointed. Or, you know, they were earned in the rankings, and somehow they were the 1 and 2 ranked tag teams, and they got the spots for something like that, I would prefer. But, you know, you got to have some content in coming weeks. So I understand it from both perspectives. You know, it's the tag team division is not the A, B, C, or D story right now. So if it was, I'd have a little bit more of an issue with it. But it feels like the, you know, sixth most important thing going on right now. So it's not a huge issue for me.
Sure. Any closing words for you?
Yeah, I agree. And I've only seen Kyle O'Reilly wrestle like maybe once or twice, and never, I think, in a 2-on-2 match on Dynamite. So that might be a reason why they have the Battle Royal. I just want to conclude with Jay White. So I'm not familiar with this guy. I have heard that he is better than Roman Reigns. I have heard that this guy is the top heel in the world. I've heard, especially when Reigns turned heel, it was like, oh, if Jay White or Roman Reigns, like, who's better and all that. So I'm like, okay, even if that's objectively not true, capitalize on that and present him better and do some due diligence. So last week when they did the backstage thing, I'm like, okay, I understand you were rushed. Maybe stick with that. But then on Rampage, he comes out, he attacks Rocky Romero, I think. I'm like, why are you wasting a guy who is as good as Roman Reigns, according to what Mike Sempervivi tells me, on, you know, a really not that relevant feud? And then promo that he cut today, I thought it was a very replaceable promo. I didn't think it was bad. I just thought it didn't feel top shelf to me. So it's like, even if he's not as good as Reigns, at least, you know, gaslight me, present him in a way, package him in a way that, you know, makes me believe that, okay, maybe he could be better than, you know, better than Reigns. What do you guys think of how Jay White's been presented so far?
So I like Jay White's promo better than you, Hinton, but I agree with everything else you said. And I think when we look at Keith Lee, you know, he gets brought in with fanfare, gets a significant win. He's got a storyline that he's part of. You know, there's a mission, there's clear steps. And then they run a vignette, because he's away on his honeymoon this week. He wasn't at Dynamite. But they had this vignette that they were able to play. And it was Keith Lee, I think, at his best in terms of, because he's never had an issue carrying himself like a big star. And, like, he's the, you know, biggest arrival to AEW ever. I mean, that's his skill set. And, you know, the issues with him is how much of that does he buy into and does it rub people the wrong way behind the scenes sometimes. But that they featured him the way you should feature someone who, as I reported, Tony Khan's enamored with him. He really wants to do a lot with Keith Lee. And that vignette was really good. And Keith Lee feels like a big deal. The cutaways to the fans, like, oh, my God, it's Keith Lee, was great. And they used that footage and edited it really well, and they knew what Keith Lee's strength is on a promo, and he delivered. So you contrast that in a complete parallel timeline with Jay White, and Jay White has a lot of just explaining why he's a big deal. And then we heard a little bit from him tonight, and I thought it was a good promo, but it wasn't enough to make it seem like this is a big deal arrival. I don't know that Buddy Murphy is going to be treated a lot different. I don't think Bobby Fish was treated all that different other than a few words that were a little, you know, the superlatives built up Jay more, but the actual presentation didn't feel like there was a lot more that went into it. So, Tyler, what do you think about what Hinton said, what I said? What's your take on it?
Yeah, so with the whole Jay White thing, I mean, you know, Tony Khan got him and admitted, you know, what he said he had lined it up on the Sunday before the Wednesday Dynamite that he was there. So, you know, he had said there's going to be a big Forbidden Door thing, and he kind of had to cover himself because he kind of realized he said too much and wanted to make good on that. So this whole Jay White thing, you know, he's going against Trent, he's going against Rocky. It seems like he's not going to be here for a long time. He's locked up with New Japan for the foreseeable future, multiple years, and it feels to me like, hey, he's a guy you're going to have matches to fill out Rampage and be kind of a special attraction, but he's not around, and you're not going to build around him like you would somebody you just signed like Keith Lee. So he's getting, you know, this guy's going to be here for a couple weeks, get a feel for him, maybe he'll be back later, feel. And, you know, I think his promo tonight, again, I more with you, Wade, I thought it was fine, but I just don't think he's going to be around very long doing very important things. So I think that's the way he's being treated, and that's the way I've kind of slotted him in my mind here. I would say for you, Hinton, this is not like a great example of what the Jay White character is, and don't assume that. And, yeah.
I thought his promo tonight was a glimpse into the charisma and the confidence that he gained which he didn't have at the beginning of his prominent push in New Japan. And I thought it was a hint of what's to come, but yeah, you wonder if, given circumstances and how quickly it happened and that he's not going to be full-time, if they just don't quite want to go all the way with him. And Hinton, this may not be a flaw. It might be a feature of his push that they want to get a buzz out of him for people who know him, but they have their eyes on, you know, Keith Lee more right now because they signed him to a big money deal and they want to turn him into a really big star.
Yeah, possibly. It's just I've just been exposed to the whole Jay White versus Roman Reigns thing too much that I'm grading him on the Roman Reigns scale. And, you know, last week, Roman Reigns' promo last week was much better than what I heard from Jay White today. If I look at the Jay White promo in isolation, it's a fine promo. But, yeah, I mean, you guys have made your point. I'll be ranting more about White on my Rampage column later in the week. I shouldn't take up too much more time here, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Have a good rest of your week. Everyone go VIP.
Great. Sounds good. I appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. All right. We're going to go to Jordan in Kentucky next. Jordan, you're not in Kentucky, are you?
No, we're in Nashville, Tennessee.
Good. You went to the show tonight?
Oh, yeah, we did. It was a good show overall. Dynamite was good. And we won't speak of – we can't really speak to Rampage because we had to leave two matches in, but I can give you a pretty good rundown of Dynamite for sure.
Yeah, that's good. We got someone else on. Jordan, we have someone else who called up who attended the show too, so collectively we can get a good coverage of it. But yeah, talk about Dynamite and what stood out to you being in that building. We're getting a lot of background noise. I don't know if we're on Bluetooth or not, but we can barely hear you.
Yeah. I'm near the road, and there's a bus currently waiting here.
Oh, okay.
I'll try to get back here a little bit where you can hear me better.
Sure, that'd be great.
The crowd overall really was kind of dead at times. They popped the spot, you know. They popped for the moves. They popped for the spot. Certain wrestlers, whenever the crowd, the entrances would come off. You know, you'd have the initial pop, and then it would go dead, and then the wrestlers would get to the ring, and then you would hear them liven up really well again. So that I was not impressed with the crowd here, though, to tell you the truth. But the show was, I thought, a pretty good show.
Who stood out as the just runaway star of the show in terms of the reaction that they got from the audience?
Well, as far as pops go, I know that Wardlow's really up and coming. I'll tell you that much. He's the biggest surprise to me because the last show we attended, he didn't get a reaction. You know, believe it or not, Jericho and Hager really got a really good pop. The thing along was loud and it was sustained, and that was a surprise. Adam Cole got a really nice pop. Eddie Kingston, when he came out, even though he didn't wrestle, he got a really nice pop. Mox got a really, really good pop right off the bat. You know, he didn't wrestle either, but Bryan Danielson, he was like the last on that list, but he got a nice one as well. But Wardlow stands out because I didn't really expect the crowd to pop like that. They were really into it.
Tyler, do you want to ask a question to Jordan?
Yeah, you know, typically Tony Khan comes out before and after the show. Sometimes says stuff, sometimes doesn't. Mm-hmm. Did Tony Khan come out? Did he say anything of note or just kind of hyping the crowd and thanking the crowd at the end?
Yeah, it was more thanking the crowd for being here right before Dynamite went on the air, and that they were real happy to be here, just to hype the crowd up, you know. And that's about it. Didn't really say a whole lot other than that. After Rampage, go ahead.
Oh, what kind of reaction did Tony get? Like, did it seem like the fans were just like really excited to see him, or just sort of like, oh, it's an executive, no big deal?
Oh, no, they were really excited to see him. You know, thank you, Tony Chant, that kind of thing. So, yeah, people are still really into what he's doing, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Cody Rhodes.
Yes.
And you know, anyway, I'm just going through my notes here. I tried to be prepared the last time I wasn't.
I heard in the background maybe somebody mentioned Cody Rhodes' name. Did Cody get any chance? Were there any signs? Was there any acknowledgement of him that you're aware of?
There was a chance. I didn't see any signs myself. We weren't, you know, close to ringside. But there was a Cody Rhodes chant. So I'm sure that's part of the crowd paying homage to Cody. Maybe, you know, whenever, I think it was when Tony Khan was out, actually. So, the fans are probably wondering why they let him slip back to, well, you know, we don't know exactly where he is, but presumably WWE, unless he's signed already. But
that's
what I heard.
I mean, that's WWE. Yeah, that is what we reported yesterday, yes.
Yeah, that's what I heard. That's where I heard it, actually.
Wow. Good sourcing.
Yeah.
Tyler, do you have anything else you want to jump in, or do you want to read through your notes, Jordan? I know you've got some things you want to bring up.
Yeah, go ahead. If you have any notes, let us know your perspective.
Yeah, you know, I was with CM Punk sit in. It went as we were expected. You know, MJF, he's exactly what they want with the hard booze, man. You know, the Punk line, the shitty little Max from shitty little Staten Island, that was a big pop.
Long Island, yeah.
And then the dog collar match, so he just drops the mic and walks out. That was kind of what you expect too. His and his reactions, man, they are perfect as they're doing. But when he first comes out, his fans acknowledge him, you know. They do. He has fans, you know, and it's not like all boos, you know, where back in the day people didn't know it was staged and they would, you know, the bad guys were, you know, were roundly booed. But, you know, well, Jurassic Express, they did that little promo and it didn't get much of a reaction really, except for the little comedy routine in there with about three ways, I think. Do you think that is Darby going to turn on Sting anytime soon?
I don't think so. I would not predict a heel turn for Darby for a while. And I think, like, I mean, the only, like, I'm just trying to spitball it. Like, if Hook is super over, and you know, a babyface, and that's where the focus is, I could imagine, like, you know, it might make sense for Darby to be a heel just so those two can feud, work together, and the crowd might be really into it. You know, like, so something like that. I don't think Darby turning on Sting jumped out to me as a likelihood over the short horizon. What do you think, Tyler?
Yeah, I would say no as well. I think him and Sting just work well together. And if they were going to break up, I think it would just happen kind of naturally where Sting would have something else to do or Darby would be elevated. But, yeah, I just don't see that being a great course of action. Just, you know, if Darby was, you know, 100 pounds heavier and a little taller, I think he could be a pretty mean heel. But him as a heel in the character he's portrayed over the last couple of years just doesn't really work for me and doesn't work in the same way. So I think it'll happen eventually, like you said, Wade, but not anytime soon.
What about the Inner Circle? What, do you think they're over with, or?
I do.
I mean, they're kind
Tyler,
of,
do you think they're?
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, is there another route this goes, Tyler, other than that?
Yeah, I don't think so. And you know, I don't know how long ago it was. It feels like forever ago. But when the stipulation was that the Inner Circle would have to break up when they were against the Pinnacle for the second or third or fourth time, whenever they did that, you know, it feels like that probably should have actually been the end because they've kind of, you know, whimpered. You know, what's the thing? You either, you know, the Cobain line, you know, either fade away or explore, whatever that line is. But they kind of just faded away as a group, and it would have been probably more impactful if they would have disbanded if they had lost and had a big moment on a pay-per-view. But, you know, that's neither here nor there, I guess. But, yeah, it just feels like it's run its course, and maybe if most of them are still around in, you know, a couple of years, you could bring it back together and have a nice nostalgia pop within AEW, which would be crazy to think about. But that's kind of where I see it at the moment. But, yeah, I think they've run their course as a team, and they're all better off solo or as individual tag teams.
It's not going to be long before we're talking about, like, the five-year anniversary show of Dynamite.
Yeah,
like,
weird.
It's
weird.
Yeah, it is. It is weird.
Yeah.
It's just changed the industry so much. And, mm-hmm. Wow. Anyway, Jordan, anything else you want to share with us? Because I do want to get to our other correspondent who is holding on hold also, who can also provide some different ideas of his perspective.
Well, I guess that's it. That's all
yeah.
I had more. That's fine. We'll get to the other correspondent.
Oh, no.
I'll listen in.
Well, Jordan, if you got more, share it with us. What else? What other thoughts from being in the building do you have in your notes that you want to bring to us? I don't want to cut you off.
Well, I know that the Mercedes Martinez and Thunder Rosa match was, I thought, a very good technical match. There was a spot, the table spot. It looked like they almost missed the table, and that could have got really bad real quick. The crowd was clearly one-sided for Rosa. And, you know, Martinez didn't get much of a reaction at all coming out. But then at the end when there was a show of mutual respect there, and then Baker and her gang came out and attacked them, I guess it's clear that Martinez will probably turn face now, I'm guessing. What do you think about that?
Yeah, this was a kind of a mini storyline, Tyler, that I think paid off pretty quick. It's almost like they knew what they wanted to do, but they're like, how can we make people care? Let's do a 2-week storyline where she's, you know, with Britt and then not, and it felt a little jarring. But I think they ended in a good place, and maybe it's a little too reminiscent of, like, what's going on with Wardlow. It's just the fast-forward version of it. You know, heels encouraging a future babyface to do things a babyface isn't crazy about doing, and Mercedes just kind of, you know, stopped and then got turned on quicker. What's your take on it?
Yeah, like, you know, it was pretty sloppy from I guess, B to C, because the A to B was fine with
right.
You know, Mercedes coming in and helping Jade win, but it got convoluted to tell this story. But in the end, I think it's the best place for Mercedes and for Thunder Rosa. I think they work well together as a loose coalition of faces to overcome the odds that, you know, Rosa is going to face presumably against Britt at the pay-per-view, kind of even the odds there and not have it be, you know, you don't want to have, if she does win, you don't want to have Britt and all her lackeys lose to one person. So it helps tell that story as needed. So in the long run, I think it's all going to work out and be for the best, but yeah, a little convoluted to get here, but you know, not the worst thing ever either.
Yeah. Yep. Jordan, any closing words or final topic from you before we move on to our other on-site guy?
Yeah, I've got one thing here that was really stood out to me is that when Santana and Ortiz came out, there was not a great reaction. And throughout the match, they built up momentum. And then by the end of the match, people were going nuts for Santana Ortiz. And I just wanted to point that out, because that was impressive. They put on a really nice performance.
That's actually a really interesting observation. Did you pick up on that, Tyler, while watching on TV?
I didn't, but I think that's why it's good to have on-site correspondence, because, you know, you get a lot of the commentary, and then the crowd miking is notoriously bad, I think, in AEW week in and week out. But, because it felt like the Jericho Kingston story was more important than Santana Ortiz getting this win from a presentation standpoint. So that is, I think, good news for me as a fan of both these guys, and definitely something I'm going to, or you can ask Wade, the next correspondent, to see if they had the same reaction, because I think that is important to take away from this.
Great. Jordan, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us after Dynamite. You had a good time tonight?
Thanks for talking to me, Wade. I appreciate it. And go BLP. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Yep. PWTorch.com/GoVIP. All right, we'll go to Devin next, who attended tonight. Devin or Devon? I'm never sure.
It's Devin.
Okay. I think Devon should be D-V-O-N, and then D-E-V-O-N, it should be Devin. But, you know, teach their own. But that's what my brain tells me. So good. I'm happy.
It would certainly make my life easier if that was the case.
I can imagine, yes. cool. Well, thanks for calling us. You heard a good portion of what Jordan had to say. But, you know, I'm curious to ask you to rank the kind of what the crowd was most into tonight. And then also, was there anything where they lost the crowd, or it felt like it was kind of the clear-cut lowest crowd investment of the night?
Yeah. I think Eddie Kingston probably had the biggest pop of the night. And I think a lot of that had to do with, you know, he's been off with an injury for the last few weeks, and this was his big return. And, you know, I think Eddie's over with the crowd in general, but, you know, the fact that he's been off TV for a while, I think kind of helped make his return a big reaction. You know, Wardlow didn't, I don't think he got a big pop when he came out, but as the match went on, you know, as he started doing the symphony of power bombs or whatever he calls it, that started to kind of get the crowd a little bit more into him and, you know, get a big reaction. And to the previous caller's point, you know, Jericho, especially when he comes out to Judas, obviously he still gets a pretty big reaction. And I think the crowd was still into him and Hager initially, but I think as the match went on and I think Jericho was trying to work a bit more heel, Santana and Ortiz started to kind of pick up steam a little bit, and the crowd started to kind of get behind them a little bit more. But Jericho definitely had the bigger reaction coming out, and I think that might have helped take away from Santana and Ortiz when they came out after him.
Interesting, yeah. Go ahead, Tyler, jump in with a question.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, did you say all the way through Rampage is my first question? You don't have to get into results, but just to kind of frame the next question.
Yeah, I stayed for Rampage. I did not stay for the post-Rampage Tony Khan wrestler, you know, thank the crowd speech. speech. So I don't know if he spoke about Cody on that piece, but I did say through Rampage.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. Well, that kind of answers my follow-up, so I appreciate that. But usually, yeah, I think, you know, Tony Khan kind of brings out a wrestler and kind of puts them over, and that's kind of a good sign of, like, a guy to look out for in the future. So that was going to be my follow-up. But, yeah, I guess more so on, you know, CM Punk came out before the show started proper. I assume his reaction was pretty good, if you could confirm that or not. And then I guess my other question was, there's two diametrically opposed matches. You had the technical match between Daniel Bryan and Lee Moriarty, and then the hardcore women's match. Do you feel like the crowd liked one more than the other, or were they into kind of every match tonight, no matter what the style was?
Yeah, so CM Punk definitely got a huge reaction when he came out. I will say it was a little weird transitioning from him coming out and, you know, everyone's got a big reaction to hearing his music and seeing him, to going straight into a promo, because it wasn't really even clear that the show had started. You know, they showed the intro on the screen, but there wasn't, like, you know, Dynamite goes live in 5, 4, you know, there wasn't any sort of countdown or anything. So I think the crowd for a second was maybe a little confused when Punk was sitting down and, you know, he started going into his promo. And it was a little bit of it was a weird promo, I think, at first, because it kind of took a second to kind of track where he was going with it. But I think once he kind of introduced the dog collar and set up the stipulation for the pay-per-view match, I think that's when the crowd was like, okay, we know what this is, we know where this is going, and they got more into it and got excited. And then as far as Bryan Danielson, I pulled a JR there, I'm sorry. The Bryan Danielson Lee Moriarty match. You know, the crowd obviously was very into Danielson. They were, you know, excited to see him. I know I was excited. I've never actually had a chance to see him live, so that was all big right for me. You know, I was hoping Lee Moriarty might get a bigger reaction, but I don't think the crowd really, you know, he kind of had a muted response. You know, there were a few chants here and there, but for the most part, he was kind of muted. But I think they were into the match, and, you know, it had enough kind of excitement in terms of big spots or, you know, Danielson would have some nasty chops, which would get a good reaction from the crowd. So I think it kind of kept them invested the whole time. You know, the match between Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez, I was hoping that the crowd would kind of be into it the whole time. You know, obviously they were very into Thunder Rosa when she came out. I don't think it's so much that the crowd wasn't into the match. I just think that there were so many spots that kind of scared the crowd or shocked them that it kind of made everyone go silent so many times. And so it was less of, we're not into this, but it was just kind of like collectively, let's catch our breath because, oh my God, they just did a suplex off the ring apron to a table that they definitely should not have done from the ring apron and, you know, things like that.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything you can convey from Rampage that is spoiler-free? And then if you want, you can just give a little spoiler warning and people can hit the fast forward button a minute. If there's anything spoilery, and Tyler, you can plug yours too if you want, that's especially newsworthy about what happened?
Yeah, so I will say one of the finishes of the matches, not getting into spoilers, was a little surprising just because who's already qualified. Maybe I shouldn't have said that part. Like, gives it away, sorry. I think Rampage is usually a pretty predictable show. Like, you know, usually the outcomes of the matches aren't too in question. You know, I think the thing I noticed the most and the thing I was curious about is, you know, when you watch on TV, yes, the crowd's not mic'd well, but it also seems like the crowd's really tired when you're watching. And after going to a show where you get there at 5 o'clock and then matches start at 6, and so you're watching about 3 to 4 hours of straight wrestling, like it's a pretty exhausting experience, even if they're good matches. And so I think by the time Rampage tapes, it kind of confirmed my suspicion of, I think the crowd's just tired at that point. And so no matter how good the matches are, it just takes that much, it takes that much more effort to get them into it.
What did you think? Oh, go. Is there anything else from Rampage before we let people know we're shifting away from it?
Oh yeah. If you want spoilers, I can give those now. I defer to you on how you'd like to handle that.
Yeah, I mean, it happened in front of live audience. We can pass it along. And as I'm rambling here explaining why I'm okay with it, that gives people a chance to hit fast forward a little bit if they want.
Yeah, so Adam Cole beat 10, which was actually, I would say, a more competitive match than I really thought it would be. They let 10 get in a lot of offense, so I think they're definitely trying to build him up more this year. And then Dante Martin and Powerhouse Hobbs. I think I was expecting Dante to win again just because it seems like Dante's been more of the focus for them lately. But surprisingly, Powerhouse won, and he actually won pretty convincingly. Like, Dante didn't really get much of any offense in.
Wow.
And that's why I was saying I was kind of surprised, just because they've already got Wardlow and Keith Lee in the match, so now they've got three pretty big guys in it. So I was a little surprised by that. And
we'll have a good excuse for slow ladder. We always complain about wrestlers climbing ladders really slowly, and now we'll have a pretty good excuse. There are some big guys who are going to be worn out and climbing the ladder slow.
Yeah. Well, maybe if Shane Strickland shows up at the pay-per-view, you know, he can be the smaller guy, but
leap over them all. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Serena Deeb did her 5-minute challenge, and, you know, she beat some jobber fairly quickly and convincingly. And then the main event, Jay White and Trent. I was curious what kind of reaction Jay White was going to get, just because, you know, I personally was very excited to see Jay White. I've always wanted to see him. And I think, you know, the people you would expect to cheer for Jay White were certainly cheering for him. You know, the Bullet Club fans in attendance who were chanting "Too Sweet" and all that sort of stuff. But I think for the most part, the crowd was just kind of, I don't know. I didn't get the impression that a lot of people in the crowd knew who Jay White was or were that excited about him. It definitely seemed like it was a small audience that was excited about Jay White.
Yeah, I mean, it goes to what I say on this show a lot, and I know it rankles some people who just think AEW should appeal to that core crowd that just knows everything. But, you know, Tony Khan's got to keep an eye on, and hopefully you don't get to read from this audience that, you know, everybody needs to be introduced. You know, there needs to be an explanation and a backstory that doesn't require homework and doesn't make people feel left out or too far behind to feel invested. And that's an interesting, you know, kind of focus group. When it comes to Jay White, you know, I think some people would just who are very absorbed in his career trajectory would think this is a huge deal and everyone's going to pop, or certainly AEW fans know him, or 80% do. But I'm not at all surprised. You know, I mean, certain cities it'd be a higher percentage and certain ones it'll be lower. But, you know, hopefully Tony takes note of that and says, yeah, you know, the world is not Twitter. You know, all wrestling fans are not on Twitter and they're not subscribing to New Japan World or listening to podcasts that cover New Japan.
Yeah, I mean, that said, I still think Jay White is probably an easier introduction to an audience that maybe isn't familiar with him compared to, say, like when Kenta showed up or, Tomohiro Ishii, you know, like when people like them show
sure.
up. I think that's probably a harder thing to introduce just because they're probably not going to be doing a promo before their match or, you know, giving a lot of backstory. And there's a lot of built-in history with Jay White and Kenny and the Bucks and everything. So I think that there's a way for them to tell that story. It's just, obviously they got to do their homework and tell that story.
Yeah. Yep. No, I think that's real accurate and fair. I was going to ask, was there just kind of anything? I mean, there's very little time when they're at commercial that there's downtime, but was there anything like with Justin Roberts or anything where you knew they were at commercial and there was a pause in the live coverage that they did to keep the crowd engaged? Like I said, with split screen breaks, it might be even hard to tell when they're away, when you're at the show.
Yeah. I mean, during the matches, I couldn't tell when they were at a break or not. I mean, maybe if someone was selling outside the ring longer or something like that, you know, maybe that's when it happens, but it's definitely not as noticeable as like a Randy Orton 5-minute rest hold in the middle of the ring or something like that. So at least during the matches, I don't think it's obvious. Even outside of the matches, the breaks between aren't that long. And, you know, Justin Roberts is usually out there calling out signs or, you know, trying to read the crowd and kind of pep them up a little bit. So, you know, for the most part, they keep the pedal to the metal for the most part. And I don't think the crowd gets a long time to kind of rest or die down. You know, there's not the traditional let me up or anything like that.
Tyler, anything else you want to bring up or ask about?
Not that I can think of. I think we covered a lot. I mean, I guess, would you rate the crowd here in Nashville good, bad, and different? And have you seen a show in Nashville? Do you live in Nashville, I guess? You know, is this typical for like a AEW crowd? As you know, I guess that's kind of my question. Does this feel like a pretty good AEW crowd to you?
Yeah. So I went to the previous show when they came to Nashville. That was a little bit of a weirder situation because it was right after the pay-per-view. So it felt like, you know, nothing really happened. So I don't think the show was quite as exciting or as comparable. But I mean, overall, I thought it was a pretty good crowd. You know, watching on TV, I agree that it's hard sometimes to tell like how into it the crowd is, just because to your point, they don't usually mic it super well. But even being there live, behind the match the whole time, there's a little bit more of an up and down. But it's definitely, I think, more of like the hardcore wrestling audience than say when you go to a WWE show and it's a lot more family focused, or, you know, sort of the people who maybe don't really watch wrestling, but they see wrestling's in town and they decide to go to a show on a lark. But yeah, I mean, I think for the most part, they were an excited crowd. It's just, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows in terms of how interested they are or how loud they are, I would say, in the match.
Great. Devin, is there anything else you want to bring up from attending tonight that's worth passing along to everybody?
No, I mean, like I said, it was a good show. I was really excited. You know, we thought we had a lot of really good matches. Thought the Darby and Sammy match was really exciting, although I think the ending was fairly predictable and, you know, a little disappointing, but at the same time, you know, you got to set up the pay-per-view match, so not that surprising. And yeah, I think the big thing was it was exciting kind of seeing a show where they're setting up pay-per-view matches and kind of seeing all the dominoes start to fall in place. So yeah, that was a really enjoyable show.
Great. Well, thanks for helping us out tonight and calling up and letting us know what it was like.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to help.
Great. Let us know next time you go to a show, Devin, or just call in anytime.
Will do. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. All right. We're going to get back to the phone lines. If you want to sneak in, if you joined us in progress, I'm Wade Keller, joined by Tyler Sage. We're covering AEW Dynamite tonight. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, and that'll play again on the switchboard, so we know that you want to be on the show. We'll go to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois, and then after that, Chris in Mount Pearl. And we've got Javier on deck, too, and some emails. Larry, welcome. What did you think of Dynamite tonight?
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking the call. I thought Dynamite was a fairly good show tonight. It was something I noticed. I didn't know if anyone had much. Was it, to me, as a fan, I don't know if noticed it either. It seemed like there was a decent amount of energy in between, you know, from the wrestlers to the fans. The fans were having fun and seemed like they, you know, actually wanted to have fun, wanted to be there and enjoyed what they saw. Oh, and by the way, Darby Allin is a human pinball.
Yes. Yeah, go ahead, Larry. I don't know what else to say, but confirm that is true. Yep.
But it was something that I've noticed, and it's not just something that I've noticed, you know, on this week's show. And this is not a knock on WWE shows, but me personally, as a fan and as a longtime fan, it seems like to me the wrestlers and the fans are having a better time on the shows. I don't know if it comes across to you or anybody else like that.
Yeah, I think so too. I think there's a different energy that feels a little bit more like a celebration of wrestling than a night out to see sports entertainment. I mean, it is different. I mean, I've talked about it. I was at one of the first post-WWE pandemic crowds last summer in person and in Minneapolis for SmackDown, and it was crazy. I mean, it was super enthusiastic. But, you know, that's not always the case, but I'm also pointing out it's not never the case. AEW tends to be a fan, I think, that's still celebrating the existence of AEW, and there's just more pride in being a pro wrestling fan I don't know. It's hard to tell. Tyler, what do you think is the reason behind it? How would you articulate it, Tyler?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said there at the very end is key. It's that, you know, people that want pro wrestling to be pro wrestling, and they feel like AEW is the, you know, the major company now that can do that for them and rejuvenate them, whether they were fans during the Attitude Era or another time, and this is, you know, more catered to, you know, an adult fan, and it's not, you know, it's not just not so sterile of an environment. It's not so formulaic. It feels a little bit more free flowing, a little bit like a comedian stand up as they're working out their stuff, as opposed to maybe, I don't know, a TED talk that you get from, you know, very well organized stuff. So, you know, there's lots of reasons for it, but it just feels more organic, feels more real. It feels more exciting because of that. It feels, you know, more like you have to see it. And just as general wrestling fans, I just feel like it scratches an itch for, you know, especially as every college night has been a male, it scratches like a male 20 to 50 demo, what that fan's looking for more than, you know, what WWE's doing for a lot of people. AEW's a little bit more focused, a little more edgy. So all those go into it, but
yeah,
you know, that stuff's hard to, you know, boil down into one thing. So
go ahead there.
I wanted to say it's not, this isn't, you know, you see all kinds of WWE versus AEW stuff online, and it's just, I'm not knocking WWE. I don't want to knock what they do or how they're, it's not saying, you know, their fans are bad or their fans just sit on their hands or their fans just want to sit there for 3 hours and trash the program. I'm not saying WWE puts out junk. I'm just saying, to me, as a guy that's been a fan for 40 years, and, you know, I when I was growing up, dating myself here, at one point I could watch six or seven different promotions on TV, and then for a while there it was just, you know, WWE, and then TNA came along, and, you know, then you had ROH and things like that. And it's not, you know, me saying the product's bad. I'm just saying that, to me as a fan and watching it, that the AEW wrestlers and the fans, it's coming off right now as a more fun show. Not that the WWE shows don't have fun, you know, they're doing some great things. Roman Reigns is their champion, you know. Brock Lesnar, you can tell, is just loving every second of what he's doing. Paul Heyman is just as brilliant as he's ever been, and they've got some real talents. You know, you can have a whole another entire show on whether you think they're using them right or not, but again, it's just, it comes across to me as right now the Dynamite show in particular is just more of a fun show, more a little more energetic, like everyone seems to be there having a good time.
Yeah, no, I think that's true, and I think part of it is just there's a sense of improvising and authenticity, and anything can happen, and WWE has a little bit more of an established format. You kind of know what you're getting, and you settle in and receive it, but it feels more, you know, predetermined, preordained, less raw and more cooked, to go against Vince McMahon's opening pitch for Raw decades ago.
If I might the Jay White and Keith Lee comparisons. Keith Lee, again, just an opinion for what it's worth, Keith Lee had, you know, a run where he was getting some recognition on the independent scene before he went into NXT and before he went up to WWE, and, you know, how they used him or misused him up there. But people, you know, knew about Keith Lee and had seen him on a national level. And Jay White, not knocking Jay White, Jay's a real talent, and he's really not even in his prime yet when you think about it, but a lot of Jay White's, you know, better matches, a lot of his recognition has come from New Japan, even though he did spend some time in Ring of Honor. So people, you know, went crazier for Keith Lee because, to me, they've seen more of him and know more of him. I mean, smarter fans, internet fans know Jay White, but not everyone who goes to an AEW show or watches an AEW show is, you know, a smart fan, an internet fan, whatever you want to call it. I think they could really do some things with Jay White. I think his interview tonight did give a little bit hint of a background. I liked the line on him being responsible for Kenny Omega starting AEW. I kind of got a good chuckle out of that one. I thought that was pretty good.
Very good. Anything you want to throw to us as far as a question or final topic, Larry?
Let's see. Final question topic. Where do you think they go now with Santana and Ortiz? Because it looks like the Inner Circle is pretty close to running its course if it hasn't completely. Where do they take Santana and Ortiz now?
Yeah, Tyler, does this just lead to a feud with Jericho and Hager against Santana and Ortiz, and then there's a winner, and then they split off, and Santana and Ortiz are a babyface tag team feuding with, I don't know, Red Dragon? You know, I mean, it's just – or Dax and Cash. I mean, it can be mix and match, I guess, with them, and they just are more established and on their own, aligned with Eddie Kingston in a mini-faction. Is that just sort of the default logical place you think they're heading?
Yeah, I mean, that's the vibe I get. I mean, like I said, with the way the match ended tonight, you know, they won. They beat the guy, Jericho, their leader, for the last couple of years, and then it cuts right to Jericho. You know, he did the job, but then he immediately gets his heat back by establishing his next big feud with Eddie Kingston, and that was the reason for it and all that stuff. So that didn't bode well for me, at least on their short-term trajectory on their importance as a tag team. So, you know, I certainly don't think they're going to be in one of the two spots in the pay-per-view. I think we alluded to that's the Bucks and Red Dragon going to get that spot. So I think depending who wins that, if let's say Red Dragon comes out of that as champions, you know, you could have Santana and Ortiz as an opponent down the line, maybe on a TV show. But until I get more notification as a viewer that they're going to be put in a more prominent role, I think they're kind of going to be on their own as a tag team, you know, a top four face tag team, about three face tag team, and kind of go from there and then work their way up to the top and probably get a title shot. But we'll see where it goes from there. I don't think that they're going to, you know, necessarily be a huge draw in the coming weeks the way they've been presented thus far. So,
all right, cool. Larry, appreciate the call.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure thing. Yep, you have a good night. All right, we'll go to Chris, and then after that we'll get Javier in for a caller closing roundtable. Chris, thanks for holding so long. What stood out on Dynamite? What do you want to talk about?
Hey, gentlemen, how are we doing? It's getting early in the morning, so I had to hang on because I really wanted to bring this up. We're 2 hours into the show, and who's the AEW champion? Because we've been... Are we sure?
I think. I got that right, yeah. Was that a
so
quiz?
I know this has been a bugbear of yours, and I pulled an experiment tonight, and I watched this show with somebody who doesn't normally watch AEW. And
yeah.
Obviously, coming out with the belt was a dead giveaway, but I said to them, you know, if you had to rank these people, like, where would you put them in order of where AEW sees them? And they had Punk and MJF at the top, and then you had Danielson and Moxley, and then the main event... with Sammy and Darby Allin, Hangman wasn't even the star of his own segment. He got a few good lines in, and he did seem confident and comfortable, but Adam Cole ran that segment. I mean, Adam Cole's going to run most segments where he's on the mic, and he's getting a great reception. And Hangman got beaten down, had no good part of that entire segment. The reason I'm still a wrestling fan, like, he's one of the few people that keeps me watching every single week, who's new and fresh and feels different and feels like he could carry a company, and he's not being allowed to. And he feels like CM Punk in WWE that made him leave. So what are they doing with him?
I thought this was a better week for Hangman, but it's still – I thought it had a little more of a swagger coming out. But the idea that he's standing in the ring and he's going to be interrupted in his first sentence is – not a sign of confidence for somebody who I thought cut, you know, one of the better promos of 2021 that I saw. There's still not quite that fire, but Cole went through and listed. Like, he's had, you know, some nice matches in his title reign so far against, you know, a good variety of opponents. Well, beating Kenny and then Danielson and Lance Archer in very different matches and feuds. And now Cole, I mean, it is a parade of good challengers. I can see where on paper, Tyler, that Tony Khan would think, this is good. This is going to make him a champion, unless the heels come out and agitate him. But there's still that something missing where it just doesn't seem like he's got the reins of the company. And, you know, no pun intended, however you want to take it, Roman Reigns or Reigns on a horse or something, I don't know. But he doesn't – he's not the guy. He doesn't feel like the alpha. And the crowd's still chanting cowboy shit, but it really doesn't feel like, whoa, the big star world champion is here when he comes out. He is a guy who happens to have the title in an ensemble group, and he might be the, you know, seventh or 12th biggest star on any given show that he's on.
Yeah, I mean, and I think might need Eric Kroll to call in and defend Adam Page here. But, yeah, no, I agree with you. And that was kind of my concern with him winning the title. Obviously, you know, in hindsight, Kenny, you need to step away. It made sense for it to happen. But, you know, if Kenny's healthy, like, I don't even know if they put the title on Hangman at this point, the way that his run has gone. And, yeah, I just think, you know, if you look into, and I don't know how much you can speak on this, Wade, but, you know, the stories backstage are, you got to, you know, Tony Khan writes stuff, but you basically got to advocate for yourself in your segment. And as you're talking to with Paige being an alpha or not being an alpha, it just seems like when his segments roll around, maybe he's not the best at advocating for himself. And I think lots of us have dealt with that in work environments where maybe you don't get the credit you deserve or you get underutilized in certain things. And yeah, I mean, I wrote, I think last week on my report that I think Adam Page, ring-wise and match-wise, has had the best run of an AEW champion, just bell-to-bell, with all his matches and his consistency in the ring. But the confidence there with AEW to present him at the top of the show, let him actually speak without getting interrupted, as you allude to, Wade, and all that stuff, it just feels like if Tony Khan and AEW don't feel like this guy can carry the company and even carry his own segments, then why should I, as a fan, care about him in a similar way? And it's just kind of a vicious cycle where it happens every week, and now it's kind of the storyline. It's not him trying to overcome and him that story. It's now him trying to overcome being, you know, the champion and do that well and just not working. You know, it worked when he was chasing. It doesn't work now as he has it from a storyline perspective. So it's yeah, I don't know. It's not ideal for him and his character, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't have any good answers, Chris, other than I think the observation is worth noting. It might, fortunately for AEW, not matter a ton. I think it is a company where you kind of – everybody gets to pick their favorite, and they might have two or three. And if the world champion who's going to main up at the pay-per-view has a really good match against Adam Cole – that might be enough, even if it's not the match that you're just emotionally as red hot invested in as a typical AEW viewer. Like it might just be okay, even if it's not ideal and not traditional and very much a break from like how WWE structures their tier system. You know, it might be by design. It might be just happenstance, but I don't think it's disaster. Even again, I'll stress, if it's not ideal, and I don't think it's a reason to pull the ripcord on Hangman's title reign, but I think it is a reason to consider maybe not sticking with it as long as you might have initially been inclined to, but I don't think it's like an urgent need, just based on the way AEW is structured. Chris, your thoughts?
I kind of want to push back a bit, which is not something I usually do here. He's had three matches since he's become champion, and he's won two of them. You say they're very different, but he's bled like crazy in at least two, possibly all three. I don't remember if he bled in the draw, but he definitely did in the match that he won against Danielson, and of course in the Texas Death Match, which wasn't actually a Texas Death Match, but we don't need to go there. I don't think they need to pull him out of being champion. I think they need to give him more time and put him higher up on the card. You're going to struggle anytime yeah. Punk and MJF are facing off. There aren't many people in wrestling, period, who would be able to draw more attention than those two. And that's fine. But he's behind so many other things on the card. And there's an argument that says the only person that should be ahead of him is the other world champion in Britt Baker. That if you build your company around your champion, then he should be either the first or the second most important thing every single week. You could also make the argument that nothing AEW does seems to be making any difference in moving any needles because their numbers are consistent no matter who's at the top of what card. But that speaks to a larger booking philosophy altogether. I just think you've given this guy the ball. let him run with it. Don't just keep taking it away from him. You know, it's like, I am not an American football fan, but if you have a star wide receiver, you don't throw to him one play out of 10 and then just try and ram it up the middle for 2 yards. It's the other 9 plays in the drive, because you're not going to get anywhere. You give it to your star. And if this guy is your star, let him get the ball.
Tyler, what say you to this point counterpoint?
Well, I would say the Cleveland Browns actually run those drives. So they're a good example of that philosophy not working. So I agree with
you. A highly paid D
quarterback. Yeah. but yeah, no, I mean, I'm with you in general, in your philosophy. I think the problem is, you know, they put it on him and you could foresee this being an issue even before he had the title. And that was what I was concerned about. And, you know, if you're, I mean, it's not just like Cody and all his matches, but you know, it feels like Hangman's a little bit in that boat where he knows he's got like, okay, in 4 months, I've got 4 matches to show what I got, and I got to go all out 100%, or else this title run's not going to look good, and it's going to hurt my legacy. And I feel like, you know, that's where he is, and that's not his fault. That is the fault of how he is positioned. And I agree 100%. Like, if he's the guy, and you're going to put him as the guy, you should, you know, he doesn't have to open and close every show like Roman on SmackDown, but he should have a segment every week at the bare minimum. He should be able to talk in front of the live crowd and get cheered and show casual viewers that this guy's important. This guy is, you know, in the, at least the B story or the C story, you know, with MJF and Punk and then the other world title that, you know, without that philosophy, it lowers the importance of the title, and it's going to hurt his legacy, and it's unfair to him. So, you know, your overall philosophy, I'm with you 100%. I just think that this could be seen, coming from a mile away, the way that he had been booked up to that point, on and off, stop and start, and it just feels like it's a continuation of an Adam Page character. He just happens to have a piece of gold around his waist, and that's really the only difference, which is unfortunate.
All right, Chris, anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, a couple more points, and they're pretty quick. The Jay White promo, I thought, was possibly one of the worst promos I've seen him cut. It wasn't awful by other standards, but the guy is incredibly charismatic in New Japan. He oozes charisma. He makes you want to hate him, but he felt so awkward. It was a pre-tape, so they could have reshot it, but, I mean, I'm European. I hand-talk. He was hand-talking, but it just felt so stilted. He didn't feel smooth. His points didn't seem to come across the way that I think he wanted them to come across. And if that is the way you're trying to introduce what could be the second biggest heel in the company after MJF, if he's going to stick around for a bit, I think that was a complete miss. I hope they pick it up. I hope he shows what he can do in the ring against Trent. I think that's a really good choice. Trent's a solid-looking guy. He can bump well, and Jay White knows mm-hmm. him. So it's a good choice of an opponent, but I did not think that was a great introduction. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I thought it was a nice teaser of kind of this. I think he had a good sinister presence and carried himself a star. I don't know that you want to amp up the promo to something super intense when you're still just sort of easing your way into this universe. And that is what they're doing with him if he's taking on, you know, a Trent Barretta type. I mean, this isn't Goldberg showing up and going, "You're next," to Hangman, and they're just going to go with him. So I'm okay with them easing into it, but I mean, but I know, I get what you're saying. It goes back to what we said earlier. It's just, I don't think this is a last second thing. And I just don't think it's time to turn the volume up to 10 with him. And I thought this was a nice teaser of who he is and what's to come. Tyler, your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of said the same earlier. I just don't think he's pivotal to AEW right now. He feels like both parties with this promo too, it feels like he's not going to be around for a while. It's just like he's getting his feet wet in the ecosystem, and maybe the second time he reappears, it'll be a little bit more sinister, a little bit more impactful if he were to take on a Kenny Omega or something. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, if you know Jay White, you were probably lukewarm or disappointed with the promo, and if you didn't know Jay White, you were probably mildly interested. And that's kind of how the – it was kind of a generic promo for that reason. So, again, I didn't have a huge issue with it, but it definitely is not any real indication of the Jay White character if you know him well in New Japan. But, you know, I think it's okay. I think we'll see what happens on Rampage. But, I don't think he's going to be a crucial figure in 6 months in AEW. And that might come years down the line where he's more important. So wait and see. But not a huge issue for me.
All right, anything else, Chris? We're running real long, so I don't want to be too long with our
real quick one.
Topics later.
Thinking about people like Hook and Keith Lee, and to a certain extent people like Orange Cassidy, I remember hearing Stone Cold on a podcast once say he had a conversation with Vince about Steve Blackman. Blackman came out, got a huge pop, and Austin said something like, "Man, what a pop." And Vince said, "Yeah, I sure hope he gets over." And that really stuck with me and has influenced how I listen to wrestling ever since. I feel like Hook and even Keith Lee, to an extent, they're getting huge pops, but they're not getting over. And I'm just wondering if you think maybe Tony Khan is falling into this trap of thinking that people getting pops is over, and how he can fix it. Because I worry that there are a lot of characters who get a loud cheer and then lose the crowd immediately because they have no substance. So I'll let you guys debate that, and I'll stick around to hear Javier's entrance music. You have a good night, guys.
Before you go, Chris, before you go, for the benefit of us and Tony Khan, and what is the difference between a pop and being over, as you understand it, based on how Steve Austin presented that?
I think a pop is, I am happy to see this person. This person is exciting to me that they are coming out, but as Bruce Pritchard is fond of saying, and then the bell rings. They don't have the substance to keep you interested. They can't tell a story in the ring. They don't have a character. It's the entrance, for example. Like a perfect example is Karrion Kross. He had that entrance. Everybody loved the entrance. But in the ring, he doesn't really have anything. We haven't seen Hook take a bump yet. We don't know if he's going to be able to. So being over, people don't pay just to see you show up. They pay to see you win or to get your rear end kicked. They pay to see you succeed or to succeed or fail. They are interested in your story. They're invested in your character. But a pop is just, yay, I'm happy to see you. That's my understanding of it anyway.
I like that. No, that's good. I think you did an artful job, an efficient job of explaining the difference. And Karrion Kross might be a perfect example of that. It can be kind of a cynical response. Well, he got a pop, but I haven't made him a star yet. Give me a chance to, you know, do that. So it can be seen that way. But I think there is something to it, Tyler. And it is something to be, you know, careful of if you're Tony Khan. Because, you know, Tony's, from what I heard, was excited about Keith Lee, in part because of big moments he had in WWE and thinking it was a good signing. And I'm not saying he traded Cody for Keith Lee because he didn't make that choice overtly, but from a budget standpoint, Keith Lee certainly came cheaper than what Cody was asking for. But Cody's out the same week that Keith Lee's in. You know, I mean, Cody's last show was a week before Keith Lee showed up. And, you know, it's time to get Keith Lee over and not just lean on, wow, look at how shocked the fans were to see him and how much so many of them knew about him and connected with him initially.
Yeah, I mean, this could be a couple hour long podcast, I think, on the philosophy of getting people over and getting them, you know, versus pops. But, you know, for example of like Hook and Orange Cassidy, and then I'm sorry, Chris, forgot the third person you mentioned. You know, that, you know, I look as an example within AEW, at least as we're talking AEW here, look at someone like Jade Cargill and Wardlow, right? I mean, they were, you know, they're imposing figures, but there's really nothing to them. And then they've done a ton of squash matches, kind of elevated their type of match they're having. And I feel like both of them in different extents are getting over with the crowd beyond, maybe they didn't have a pop at first, but they built the character over. So someone like a Hook, someone like an Orange Cassidy are in different routes, right? I think Orange Cassidy's kind of slotted to where he is. You know, I don't think he's beating Adam Cole, but you can use him in places to be an elevated Trent, things like that. And, you know, someone like Hook could do the same trajectory that Jade Cargill and Wardlow have done, where you slowly up the style of their match and then they take bumps and then they work their way up and get over and become a character within AEW. So I think it just is a case-by-case basis on a lot of that stuff. But, yeah, I mean, someone like Keith Lee's totally different, right?
we've seen a lot of people enter, like an Ethan Page, for example, entered in a ladder match, and then they kind of don't do anything with them, and the character doesn't go anywhere, and they get a big pop, and then they're not over because they don't do anything with them. So it's the theory, you know, it's whatever your philosophy is of targeting X number of people and really putting everything you can into making them stars, and AEW certainly is not really using that philosophy at the moment. They're kind of throwing everything against the wall and going there. But, yeah, I just getting someone over, it takes a concerted effort, and I think Jade and Wardlow are good examples of that, and there's other bad examples of that. So just in terms of how you want to do each character. And, so I think they can, and they have with some, and they haven't with others. So it just kind of yet to be seen on how that person is utilized.
All right, very good. Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. Good topics.
Yeah, no worries. Oh, and Damian Sandow's the perfect example of someone who popped but was never over, by the way. Just thought of that one. But.
Yeah. Oh, nice. Been on. All right, Chris, we'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Okay, thanks. You have a good night.
Yep, you too. All right, Javier Machado, PW Torch VIP contributor. Welcome. Welcome to the show first.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Tyler. How's it going?
Good. You ready to hear your jingle? Excited?
Yeah. Ready and
nervous?
Excited and a little bit embarrassed.
All right, we'll introduce the Javier. I play that again. That was a little overmodulated. Let's see here.
I know what's my new ringtone.
Awesome. Down to Miami, time for Javier. Javier, we're going to be sort of efficient because the night's long and I have other things I actually have to still do yet tonight, even though it's late. You held on a long time, so just be efficient, take the time you need, but we won't do as long of a segment as usual because we just had two on-site correspondents.
What is there to do? It's like not like there was much news this week. that's okay, because pretty much everything was hit already, and a lot of the stuff, Tyler and I had the conversation already on Friday for some of the stuff that we've already been talking about. But on the Jay White thing, what people got to remember is that Jay White is a cameo. He's not like the main, you know, he's not entering the show. So this is more like, you know, Doctor Strange and Thor Ragnarok. You know, he's in there for a 15-minute scene. So, and that's one of the things that Tyler and I talked about on Friday was I would rather than not make that big of a big deal of him if all he's there is for a match with Trent. You know, now this is a match that's going to get played on New Japan World because, of the history between the two of them. So there is history for the people who are fans of New Japan. Because Trent being a member of Chaos, and there being bad blood there. So there's stuff for that audience. But for the AEW audience, it's just like, you know, hey, look, you know, there's the guy. We said who he was. I absolutely loved the taking credit for the birth of AEW line that he had. So that's, you know, that's pretty much, you know, on the Jay White thing. Now, you know, hopefully he has an awesome match, on Rampage. And so then that will make you want to see him again. And then we'll see if, you know, they fold this into the whole Kenny Omega thing that's going on.
Javier, do you like that he is making this cameo because it enters him into the universe briefly, familiarizes people? Or is it... not wasted time, but like you only have that one chance to make a first impression, as a cliche goes, but you only have one chance to be this big deal arriving new star. And instead he's going to stop in and then not necessarily be around full time. And that TV time and that push and that touting him as a big deal by the announcers, that's being used on him instead of other people who are sitting around in the back going, you know, how long do I have to wait to get my turn? Or, you know, invest in people who are going to be here every week.
Well, the thing is that since I have a strong feeling that this is going to, we're going to have some more New Japan AEW relations in the future once travels more free, and you know, I'm not sure what the situation in Japan is currently. I'm not up to date with that in terms of COVID. So I'm pretty sure they're, you know, eventually we're going to see like something big happen, you know, with like top stars mixing it up from the two companies. So, you know, so for that reason, you know, I don't want to see them like blow their load too early. I want to see them, you know, but at the same time, I do like the idea of, you know, I could have had some wrestlers in the back being frustrated that, you know, oh, look, this is a 15-minute segment that's going to somebody else that's not, you know, they, you know, to use Bianca Belair's, they don't even go here. I can understand that, but I think it's something that's for a long play, which should hopefully like be like a major event.
Very good. Yep. What else, Javier?
Actually disagree with you, Tyler, on the skit they did between Young Bucks and Red Dragon, because I love that. That was probably my favorite moment of the night. Because it kind of filled in the story without them actually like obviously telling you, where, you know, the two Red Dragon and the Bucks go their different, you know, directions. And at that point, you know, they're playing it off that Cole's not really, doesn't even, you know, recognize Brandon being there being recorded. And he legitimately does not know which way to go. So it's kind of telling you that, you know, he's not playing this. This is not like a play for power. This is just him, you know, literally thinking like, oh, yeah, we're one big happy family, not realizing that there might be, you know, something else going on. So, you know, I like that because it added character to the whole, you know, what's going to end up being the eventual, you know, breakup or whatever they're going to do in that storyline.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, and I don't know. It makes Cole look a little more childish and not as serious in that role, as opposed to what I saw in the ring with him, you know, having his guys attack Paige from the back. But, you know, in general, I agree with you. I just, as me personally as a fan, I enjoy a little bit more subtle breakup that was happening before it was explicit on the screen there. But, you know, I understand why it's important too. So that's just my personal preference more than anything. So I agree with both of you that it was probably necessary. It just wasn't as much for me as it was for you two, I would say.
What else, Javier?
And I don't think that it's going it might lead to both Red Dragon and Young Bucks winning the respective Battle Royals. But I think that's a story they're probably going to play off longer. I think there might they might meet in the Battle Royal and one of the two teams might end up winning. I do think the other team will likely be Santana and Ortiz would likely be the other team. And then, you know, because I would think that Red Dragon versus Young Bucks would be something you would be aiming for a pay-per-view. So, which would be whatever comes after Revolution. And that's pretty much it. I mean,
cool.
Everything else is pretty much picked over. So,
That works for us. Javier, good to hear from you. Hope you like your jingle. And we'll talk to you next time.
No problem. Have a good night, guys.
And what have you got? Anything coming up you want to plug, by the way, before you leave us?
Well, I got the that's right. The I'm actually working on it right now. The Elimination Chamber primer be up by tomorrow afternoon after I come home from work. So for what's going on in the over in Saudi Arabia. So.
Yep. Very good. Thanks, Javier. Always good to hear from you.
Have a good night, guys. Bye.
Yep, you too. See you. All right. We have gone so long, and we have a number of emails, and I want to save the emails because we just got to wrap up here. So I apologize to those who emailed, but I might do a special focus on AEW and include them so they at least get on a podcast on a timely basis over the next couple of days. And normally we don't have two on-site correspondents and as many calls, so we always get the emails, so I don't want to discourage emails. And it looks like there's some good topics from some listeners here. But we will wrap up. Tyler, tell people how they can follow you on social media and how they can also hear from you otherwise during the week.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Ring of Tyler. Appreciate a follow there. Interact with me there. Very happy to do so. And then every Wednesday, you can see my alternative report of AEW Dynamite in the written word. And then on Friday night, as you alluded to earlier, Wade, I do the VIP. I host the VIP Rampage post show with a rotating cast and other very exciting things coming to the torch in the near future. But I will leave it at that as a tease. And yeah, so you can catch me again at Ring of Tyler on Twitter. And Wade, if you want to forward me any of those emails, I can cover some of those on Friday too, but totally up to you.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yep. That's actually a real good idea. All right, cool. Thanks, Tyler. Thanks to all our site correspondents. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to Javier. Whoever else I didn't thank you too. And we will sign off for today and be back with the pay-per-view preview tomorrow with Nick Barbati and Tom Colihue from Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure. That'll be on our Blue Logo show. And I'll be by Friday night with the SmackDown post show.